Please note that assistive listening devices for the use of the council chamber are available on request from the clerk's office or down to my immediate right. I'll now call on Councillor Downey to start the meeting with a prayer, and then we'll do the national anthem.
Help us this day to run with patience the race that is set before us. May neither opposition without nor discouragement within divert us from our goal. Inspire in us both strength of mind and steadfastness of purpose, that we may meet all fears and difficulties with unswerving courage and may fulfill with quiet fidelity the task committed to our charge through Jesus Christ our Lord.
Before Council this evening, we presented the 2018 Seniors Award to Mr. Ken Graydon for advocating on seniors' issues and his outstanding community leadership. Congratulations to Ken Graydon. We confirm and recognize the heritage designations of two historical homes in Caledon, the Drury House, owned by Jenny LaForestier and Alistair Sumner, and the Walker Farmhouse, owned by John Spina. John Paul was here to receive that. These homes now have permanent place in Caledon's past and present and future. We also presented two Heritage Awards of Excellence to Paul Moran for restoring the former Alton Congregational Church Town Hall and Sam and Luann Mora for the restoration of the Graham Robison House. Before I read the Indigenous acknowledgement this evening, I want to recognize that June is National Aboriginal History Month. I'm very proud to read the renewed relationship we're developing with our First Peoples. I want to let everyone know that on Caledon Day, June 16th, I will present a wampum belt to Chief Stacey LaForme of the Mississaugas of the New Credit as a symbol of our friendship and to continue on the next 200 years. You'll see the belt that we had commissioned on display in the case out in the art atrium. We would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather, which we form, the town of Caledon, is part of the Gentis Treaty lands and the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit. We also acknowledge all Indigenous peoples who have walked this land in the past and who walk it today. We are grateful to have the opportunity to live and work on this land, and by doing so, we give respect to our First Nations. Is there any pecuniary interest from Council tonight? If not, I will move on to the confirmation of minutes. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor McClure, that the Council meeting dated May 15th, 2018 be approved. All in favor? Carried. Is there any urgent business matters? Councillor Shaughnessy?
It's only urgent for me. My computer's not behaving and I can't pull my agenda up. I would really appreciate if somebody could get me a full agenda. Thanks.
Okay. Moved by Councillor Groves, second by Councillor Innes, that the Section 7.4 of the Procedure of Bylaw be waived to permit urgent business matter regarding grass cutting on the town-owned properties.
Pardon me?
So this requires two-thirds of a vote, okay? All in favor? It's two-thirds. Moved by Councillor Groves, second by Councillor Innes. Whereas residents have expressed concern within the limited level of service as it relates to grass cutting on the town-owned property. Whereas the springtime periods with heavy rainfall, grass grows quickly, and the use of chemical sprays have been removed of noxious weeds is prohibited. And whereas due to the increased growth, there are more town-owned property and green spaces to maintain. Now therefore be resolved that town investigate the cost to increase the current level of service of grass cutting out of the town-owned property and report back to findings back to council as part of the 2019 budget. And it's all displayed here as you see it. Everybody can give everybody a minute to look at it. Councillor Mizzapelli, you have a question? Not to this? Okay. If there's no further questions, I'll call the question. All in favor? Carried. Now we'll move on to deferred business. So now we'll have to move to deferred business from May 29th, 2018 General Committee meeting. The following motion required to go into confidential session. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor McClure, that Council should go into confidential session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act. Following purposes, confidential report 2018-15, personal matters, but identifiable individual, Calvin Walk of Fame, nominations 2018. Confidential report, advice on subject solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for the purpose affecting the Municipality Ontario Support Court Matter, number 405-13, Orangeville Railway Development Corporation, and the Corporation of the Town of Caledon. All in favor? Carried. So what it means is that council will now move into session. So we're going to have to ask everybody if you could please, you're going to have to leave the council chamber and please take all your devices with you, please. We don't want to be responsible for them. Mr. DeBoer, that Corey Trempenier be recognized for the 2018 honoree for the Caledon Walk of Fame. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Groves, Councillor DeBoer, that Councillor Brockwell be authorized to provide an offer of settle. Attached schedule B to confidential report 2018-18 to the Orangeville Railway Development Corp on behalf of the town in respect to the Ontario Supreme Court matter of 405-13. And the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute any all documents, including without limitation, of full and final releases necessary to complete the settlement should the Orangeville Railway Development Corporation accept the offer to settle. All in favor? Carried. Now I'll move on to delegations. Do we need to add? I need to do this one first, right? Okay. Okay, I will now call on upon Jean Carberry to approach the podium to provide a delegation concerning the Bolton Business Improvement Area Fact Sheet. Please note, in accordance with the procedural bylaw, you're provided 10 minutes for your delegation. Members do have, if you do have questions for Ms. Carberry, I will ask them at the end. Ms. Carberry, you are ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of Council, I'd like to address the motion recently passed by the Downtown Bolton BIA requesting that the bylaw creating the BIA be repealed, which would in effect disband the BIA. And specifically, I'd like to address the proposed fact sheet that you in General Council decided to send out to all persons entitled to notice. First of all, I'd like to assure Council that all of the activities of the BIA this year are continuing in full force. Flowers and banners are being put up in downtown Bolton. the farmers market in its new location at the courtyards of Caledon has opened last Saturday. Our board members are committed and dedicated to all of these activities. Many of them were out in the heat last Thursday, putting out flowers, driving tractors and golf carts, and tying up the flowers to the railings. The banners will be completed up the South Hill shortly, and the farmers market. Many, again, of our members were out at dawn on Saturday to see the beginning of the farmers market. So I will not hear of any suggestion that this board is not dedicated. Many of those same members have served the BIA, not just in this last four-year board, but in previous years, going back perhaps 16 or 20 years. So that is not the issue. These board members and I have been listening to our members, and many of them are telling us that the BIA is not working for them anymore. There have been many changes over the last 30-plus years since the BIA has existed. A good example is Midnight Madness, which has changed very much in character. The character of downtown Bolton has changed. Midnight Madness used to be an opportunity for retailers to move their business out to the sidewalks and have sidewalk sales, promote their business, and do good sales. Now it may be a fine event for the members of the community, but it's really not benefiting the downtown business owners who are actually paying for it. Our members are saying to us that the BIA just costs too much. Some of them have asked to opt out, not realizing, of course, that that's not even an option. Many people do not realize that the costs, everything that's spent by the BIA is collected in taxes from the downtown owners, often passed on to their tenants, depending on the terms of their lease. A lot of people think that the town of Caledon pays for BIA activities, which of course they do, but every penny of it is collected from the members. Also, the cost, depending on the budget that's set every year by the board of the day, these costs can increase with no possibility of control within the four-year election period. It's been suggested to us that we should have canvassed our members before passing this motion. As I said, we listen to our members, but in terms of canvassing all of the members, we're really not able to do that. And the reason is that only the town has a list of the owners of properties in the downtown area. They're not allowed to share that list with us because of privacy reasons. Nor, I believe, are they allowed to share lists of tenants that may be provided to them by the owners. So really, the only canvas that can be done is the process which is set out in the Municipal Act and which we are now asking the council to engage in. Now, specifically the proposed fact sheet. On reading the motion, I have concerns about it. Will this be a list generally of the kinds of activities that BIAs engage in, or will it be specific to this BIA, to previous BIAs in Bolton? Will it also set out for people the costs of all of these activities? Can staff even know what the costs might be? Will it make clear to members that the costs are collected from them through their taxes and that they have no choice than to pay them? Will it also explain that the more activities there are, the higher the costs, and they will have no control over this? Will the BIA be Will the BIA board be consulted on the content of the fact sheet? And I notice it says that it should be unbiased, but I question how it can be unbiased if it lists all the good stuff and doesn't talk about the costs. And finally, Mr. Mayor, I have a concern that in sending out this fact sheet, council could be perceived as promoting one side or the other of the question, particularly if it only talks about the good things and not the costs. The process as set out in the Municipal Act is already weighted in favour of keeping the BIA, because only those who wish the BIA to be disbanded have to actively vote. And those people must make up at least half of the members in numbers, as well as represent half of the total assessment. Those who want to keep the BIA or who are indifferent do not have to do anything. So therefore, I'm respectfully asking that the town remain neutral in this matter, simply follow the required processes set out in the Act, and I ask that you not pass the motion, or at least not in its present form. Thank you.
Okay. I have some questions here for you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jean, thank you for coming in and clarifying a lot of these things, because through that whole process and the vote that was taken to look at whether or not the BIA should remain, there's been a lot of social media postings that was very misleading to the community, basically suggesting that none of those things that you listed were going to continue, the flowers, the banners, the market, and all that. So I thank you for coming in and clarifying that. Through you, Mayor Thompson, I wonder if staff can explain, Ms. Carberry touched on the whole tax levy portion. There seems to be also some misleading information on social media about that, and I think it's important to have a clear explanation on how that tax levy works for the members in the BIA association, the members that forms the BIA.
Ms. De Goiter.
Thank you. Through your worship, two members of council. As you know, council formed the BIA many years ago, and it's a specific area within a BIA area, and that actually has a special levy. So those business owners actually are responsible for for paying that levy for the BIA. Is that the answer you wanted, or?
No, it's not.
Sorry.
We know that that's a special levy, but well, I guess it's another form of tax that they pay, and that's what we need to be very clear on, because information's been posted to mislead people that this was not a tax levy that they were paying, an extra tax levy to provide the services that they do provide in the downtown core. So just for clarification,
So through the mayor to Councillor Groves, you're absolutely correct. That is a levy, which is an extra tax that only those people have to pay. And Ms. Carberry is correct that they do not have an option to, or an opt-out clause, that they must pay that.
Perfect.
May I just add to that? On the tax bill, it just reads special levy. It doesn't say BIA, and that's why I think a lot of people don't understand that that's what they're paying for.
Okay.
Right. Well, I'm glad that we have that cleared up, because, again, a lot of this information has been very misleading to the community. Jean, you talked about this issue was raised about whether or not the BIA needs to remain at one of the AGMs. Was it not?
Yes, at our AGM, yes, it was.
That's right, and there were members from the BIA that were present at that AGM.
Yes.
Right.
That's what the AGM is. Yeah.
Right. So this is not the first time that it's been discussed. It was raised at the AGM, and then the board, from that point on, the board started to look at the concerns that were raised at the AGM as to whether or not the the BIA should continue, correct?
Yeah, we had heard the concerns before, but yes, they were brought out on the floor and discussed there.
Perfect. Thank you. I think it's really important that we have those types of clarification, because so this way it leaves no room for misinterpretation of the meeting at the board and the vote that was taken at the board. So thank you for doing that. I also agree with you, Jean. I think that the town does need to remain neutral on this and respect the decision of the board. And I myself, when the motion came forward, thought it would, that those motions were completely unnecessary, because there is a process that's set out, and our clerk was quite diligent in providing a fact sheet that sets out that process, and I posted that fact sheet. So this way, any questions that the community had with respect to what was posted on social media, I believe that that cleared up a lot of those concerns and questions that the community had. So, Carrie, thank you for doing that. I think it's important that we do have the facts when we are looking at these things. So, Jean, thank you again for coming in and for clearing all this up, because it is very important that we do that. And, by the way, the flowers look great. It was nice to see all the people out at the market. And we will continue to do what we do down there. And I'm sure as merchants, you've stated that at the board as well, that as property owners and business owners, you will continue to do that, whether the BIA remains or not. Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks. Just sorry to add again that this whole process will take at least 4 months. So we are through probably to the end of the year continuing in what we do.
And every property owner and business owner, and this might be a question for the clerk, would be notified. Is that correct? And provide an opportunity?
So through the chair to Councillor Groves, you are correct. So every property owner of the businesses will be notified, and they are instructed in that notice to provide that notice to all the tenants within their property.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks for coming, Jean. I think the first question, because there was a statement made that the town created a BIA, but correct me if I'm wrong, but the BIA is actually initiated through the businesses, and the town passes a bylaw to initiate the BIA once the businesses or a percentage of a number of businesses support creating a BIA, and then that gives the town the ability to tax or to assess a levy. It's not a tax, really. It's a levy. Would be a.
It's enforced like taxes.
Yeah, it is, and I think you're the way you word it and the suggestion on the tax bill is probably something that should be looked at. Is that it should be like a BIA levy, or a BIA charge, just like we do with the IT charge. So, but am I correct in that it's the businesses that do start the. Start the ball rolling in wanting to create a BIA?
That's what the Municipal Act allows for that. To be honest, I wasn't there 30 plus years ago when this happened, so I don't know specifically how it came into being in this municipality, but that is the process, yes.
Okay. You did make the comment that you didn't want the motion passed as such. But do you have recommendations or suggestions of changes?
Well, I would prefer it not be passed at all. But certainly if it is to be passed, it should also make clear what the costs are, how the costs are paid, how the costs are enforced, mm-hmm. and that the costs can escalate depending on the decision of the BIA board who enforce at the time.
And I guess the question would be is would it be appropriate for you to review it or create it with town staff? Would that be supportable?
If that was the decision of council, I think the BIA board should have a look at the fact sheet before it goes out, and I would certainly be happy to cooperate in preparing it, yes.
You do make an interesting point, an interesting argument, in that this is the only way to speak to the members to see if there is enough interest in continuing. You can look at it one way. You're talking about your motion is to disband it, but the flip side to it is there enough interest in continuing it?
Well, the motion had to have that kind of wording because of the way it's set out in the Municipal Act. But really what we're asking council to do is canvass the members. You know, we're hearing from some members that they're not happy with it. Of course, there are others who are happy. We really don't have the means to decide what the majority view is.
And it would be interesting to have that as the chair. I think it's probably interesting to know that answer.
Yeah, and the process in the Municipal Act allows for that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Misipelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Ms. Carberry, for coming and delegating. Just very quickly, the entire intent of my motion, as it was at the BIA board table, was just to provide factual, unbiased information of what the BIA provides, the Bolton BIA, has and does provide in just factual form. And in fact, there is not bias. It is fact. And to your point, though, about the cost for having those services, that too should be part of the fact sheet, because it is a fact that the cost to pay for that budget is acquired through a tax levy applied to the property owners and likely passed on to the tenants. That's a fact, and I have no problem with that, because it is a fact. But it is a fact also that all those things that the BIA has historically done in concrete form, such as banners and benches and flowers, but also, as was indicated in Mr. Gorder's communication, there's a communication piece, an advocacy piece, and our board has certainly seen that as a piece of what a BIA does, as advocating for the commercial core. We saw that through the Region Appeal over the past two summers and the work that they've done. So that is the fact of what a BIA, the Bolton BIA, does. And that's all I was trying to do at the BIA table and here at the council table. And your point about the levy, that is what pays for it, that's a fact, and that should be stated. It should be stated that if there is a BIA, there's no opt-out. You're in or you're out. That's a fact. I have no problem with that. I just know personally that there are businesses in Bolton that do not understand that thing you're seeing there, that flag or those flowers or that person watering the flowers, is paid by that tax levy of the BIA. And that's all that this is trying to do. So I have no problem with what you're asking for, because that's a fact. And it is the cost to provide those services. And that is not a problem. Certainly on my part, you did indicate that there's no ability to affect the budget and by extension the levy. I would challenge that in that we are required to have an annual general meeting where a proposed budget is brought to the broader BIA. Whether they choose to come or is up to them, but it is brought to them. And we're there to listen to them, and if there is causes of concern or whatever, that can translate into an amended budget, which would either increase or decrease the tax levy associated with that. So there is a communication piece where each of those property owners, business owners, have an opportunity, if they so choose, to engage in that process to create that budget by providing their input. So I just mentioned that there. And I guess the last point I want to make is you talked about in order to disband the BIA, it actually requires participation. It requires casting a vote supporting the motion of the BIA board, which is correct. And you said if someone takes no action, it's actually a no vote, which is also true. What I just didn't want to happen is for someone to cast a no vote just because they weren't aware that they maybe weren't given the notice and they were due the notice. So the entire intent of my motions, the entire intent of the conversation at the BIA table, was to make sure that every eligible property owner and or business owner who has right to receive notice did receive notice, and that they were given unbiased factual information, both on the costing and on the service level of the services provided, so that they can form that opinion, whether they choose to support it or not. And that is entirely what the motions speak to. And again, your point about the costing, I have no problem with that because it's a fact. So I just wanted to raise those things. And again, thank you for coming out and delegating council.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Mezzapelli. In your motion, though, I didn't see any mention of costing. And your point about the annual general meeting, it's brought to the AGM. The budget is brought to the AGM for discussion. It's not approval or input, or it's for discussion. But that's quite right.
Okay. Sorry, Mayor Thompson. Sorry. So I don't know through you to the clerk. And again, because it's factual, I don't know if you were going to include that anyways as a part of that fact sheet. But I have no problem putting that, you know, if you have a BIA, there's a levy that's applied to each property owner. Would that require an amendment, or is that just something that would be included as part of the fact sheet?
So through the mayor to Councillor Mezzapelli, I can take that direction, but I would suggest at the time of the actual item coming forward at council that an amendment come forward with those suggestions, so it's very clear what you're asking staff to provide.
Okay, I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
And that the BIA board have input?
Yep. I think that's fair. Councillor Shaughnessy?
Thank you very much, Ms. Carberry, for coming and delegating. I appreciate it. I've read everything, listened. Would you classify your meeting, the meeting that you had, was that a legitimate meeting? Meaning, did you have quorum? Did you present the proper timelines for that meeting to your members?
We did have quorum. The motion in its entirety was reproduced in the agenda, which was circulated, was on the website, so there was proper notice. I can also, if I may, I can say that the vote was 5-1, and I didn't vote. Being chair, I didn't have to vote.
Oh, that's 5-1. So it wasn't even a close vote. It was almost a unanimous vote.
Correct.
Okay, that's great. So, so I didn't support Councillor Mezzapelli's motions when they came forward because I felt it was interference in a legitimate process that's already outlined, not just by your organization, but by the Municipal Act. So I really looked at it as interference. And I think the 5-1 vote really clearly outlines the intentions. So I still support you. And
there were three members absent.
Just right. No, that's but there. Were they given proper notice to come and
yeah.
stuff? And they okay. Yeah. So fair enough. I just don't know why this council is interfering. If the process is already lined out in the Municipal Act.
Councillor Shaughnessy, I think you're leading there. It came as a process. Once we're not questioning the BIA. It came to us. They gave us direction to bring it to council, and that's how it came to council. We're not interfering, and I want to clarify that right now.
Well, I think Councillor Mezzapelli's motions were interfering, and I think that's why we have Mrs. Carberry here. Is why.
Point of order. We're supposed to be having questions to the delegate only. If you want to discuss the matter, there's
excuse
a time
me. Then maybe you should
forward.
Have talked to Rob Mezzapelli.
Me.
He spoke for 10 minutes.
Excuse me.
Give me a break. Excuse me, two-tier system here. So do you feel, then I will ask a question, do you feel that those motions were interfering in your legitimate process as a BIA?
I did.
That's what I wanted to know.
That's why I'm here.
That's why I thought that's why you were here, but let's just put it on the record. Thank you very much.
Compromise is always possible, but my preference would be that the motion be defeated. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very
now,
much.
I've got more questions for you. You're not done yet. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. And I just want to clarify, I have the Municipal Act in front of me under section 204.1A, and I'm going to read it. A local municipality may designate an area as an improvement area and may establish a board of management to oversee the improvement and the maintenance of municipally owned land, buildings, and structures in the area beyond that provide at the expense of the municipality generally, and to promote the area as a business or shopping area. The levy that's paid, it doesn't come from the taxes that the town collects per se in general. It is an extra tax. So the municipality, and I don't know if we're in contravention. I mean, somebody can clear it up because I'm not an expert on this. But the way I'm reading it is that land owned buildings and structures in the area beyond that provided at the expense of the municipality generally. So maybe through you to the clerk, you can explain, does that mean the town should be contributing dollars to it? I need an interpretation of what this is.
So I'm going to ask for staff, the treasurer or Mr. Glitter or Mr. Wong.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. As mentioned earlier, there is a bylaw that establishes the businesses within the business improvement area. And the business improvement area board every year establishes a budget as to what services or what decorations are done to promote that the businesses within that area. That is over and above what the town provides through the general tax levy. So the businesses, through the Business Improvement Area Board, are levied a special tax for the Business Improvement Area. And those monies are then turned over to the Business Improvement right. Area Board, which then take over those additional activities, such as the plantings and the flags and everything else.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wong, for that explanation. And I will say that the BIA, over the years that I've sat on the board, and I've been on the board since 2000, have been doing a fabulous job in the downtown, helping to promote those businesses. Unfortunately, I have not seen any contributions from the town with respect to dollars to help the BIA over and above what they collect to help with improvements downtown. And I'm going to give you an example. For all the years, for 18 years, I recall, the BIA has been asking for help and assistance with watering the plants. It's very expensive. They've constantly heard no, because the town does not have the resources, the dollars to help. They've asked for funding. Well, we do have something coming.
Councillor Groves, I think you're leading off.
I think
you leave it for the motion.
I am not, Mr. Mayor. I am simply stating some of the things that I'm reading from the Act, and I'm just stating that the Act says that the municipality should be assisting and providing some of those,
understood.
Some of those
That's
services.
That's more for the motion. We're supposed to be asking questions of the...
Mr. Mayor, Councillor Mezzapelli did not ask one question of Ms. Carberry. You allowed it. I'm going to ask as the member
I've
who
cut
represents...
I've cut you a lot of slack as well.
As the member who represents the Bolton community, and I've been on the BIA for so many years, this is an opportunity. This is an issue that is really important to our community.
Understood.
And it is very important that we have those clarifications and that we state some of the facts, because at the end of the day, we have a great community, and the things that the BIA does, it needs to be recognized. But
and this
unfortunately,
can be said when we bring the report forward.
And unfortunately, there has been a lot of misinformation, so thank you for your leniency, Ms. Carberry. Thank you for coming in and for making those clarifications, and I hope that the media will pick it up and social media will pick it up and understand that there is a fair process here and that the BIA followed the Municipal Act as it set out. Thank you.
Yep. Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Just briefly, before I get to my questions, I will point out, and I was going to keep my my interaction as questions. Councillor Grove spoke first, and she did not ask any questions. She made comments, so I followed in kind, and Councillor Shaughnessy failed to note that. I just want to quickly read, Ms. Carberry, the motion that was passed at the BIA table. The whereas. Sorry, therefore be it resolved that the Board of Management request the Town of Caledon repeal the bylaw which created the BIA, being bylaw 70-80-72, as amended, and further that Council initiate and conduct all necessary procedures following on this request as required by the Municipal Act. So what my question is, how is that my motions, we're still going ahead with this process, it's still rolling ahead. The only thing it is including is unbiased factual information, and I support putting the costing there. The intent of the motion at the BIA table was to initiate the process as in the Municipal Act. How is this contrary?
Well, the way the motion read, it was presenting one side only and not the downside. It was preempting a process whereby the town is able to reach a number of members, owners and tenants in the downtown area that the BIA is not able to. If anyone wants to know about activities of the BIA, all they have to do is look at the website. It's all there. So for the town to insert itself, as it were, by sending out a fact sheet or whatever you want to call it, to me it looks as if they're trying to sway the result one way or the other. And the fact sheet certainly could be worked on to make it less like that, but to me, it's best just to leave it alone, let the process roll out as intended in the Act, and see what happens.
Okay. I would contend that the intent of the motion of the BIA is absolutely captured and is exactly what is being moved forward on. That would be my position. And I guess the last question for me, Mayor Thompson, through you to the clerk. I'll ask the same question. The request of the BIA to go through the process to repeal the bylaw, are we contravening that in any way in from an administrative perspective with these amendments?
Through your worship to Councillor Mezzapelli, the Act is silent on that, so in my opinion, no, you're not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Carberry, thank you so much for your delegation today.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will now, I have an additional list on the agenda of the clerk's office to receive an additional delegation request from Tony Rumo, as a request received after the deadline approval must be provided by council. There's been a motion brought forward, moved by Councillor Mizzapelli, second by Councillor McClure, that emergency delegation be heard by Tony Rumo. Regarding May 29th, 2018 General Committee report concerning Bolton Business Improvement Area fact sheet. And we need 2/3 of a vote for this. All in favor? Carried. I will now call on Mr. Tony Rumo to approach the podium and provide a delegation concerning the Bolton Business Improvement Area fact sheet. Please know, in accordance with the procedural bylaw, you're provided 10 minutes for your delegation, sir.
My name is Tony Rumo. I'm a landlord in the downtown core. I've also sat on the previous board. So I can say that there's no question that the board is doing a great job. What it seems to me is that the cost is the problem. This board that we have right now is a little top-heavy with landlords. And I can see their position is they don't want to spend money because they don't want to pass it on to their tenants, because nobody wants to pay higher rents. So I don't know why we have to get rid of the BIA. Why don't we address the issue with the BIA, which is costs? It doesn't make sense to get rid of a board because we have no money. We touched on the municipality helping out, and I was always one of the proponents from day one that said, why are we paying for watering the flowers? I live in Vaughan, and through Kleinberg, the BIA doesn't water the flowers there. The municipality does, and they have Bloom, and they have all these beautiful projects. So to hear us just say that we want to get rid of the BIA, it doesn't make sense to me. And I did not receive any notice. So I think that the process is flawed, that all landlords and tenants don't know what's really going on. Seems to me here that we're trying to rush something and get rid of a good thing. It took us almost 12 years to get where we are. When I started out with the board, it wasn't structured the way we had it now. There's structure now. There's a lot of participation. There's a lot of good things that have happened. We've mentioned a few things. The clock is something no one mentioned. That was hard work done by one of the previous people that created the BIA. So in my opinion, I don't think that we should be in a position to rush to repeal something that is working. Well, let's look at what the problem is. And the problem is nobody wants to pay extra tax. That doesn't mean you get rid of the board. So I would support the motion that we give as much information as possible to the landlords, to the tenants, so that they know when they can come out and voice their concerns. It seems to me that the board makes their own decision here. They just, somebody come up with a motion, oh, four people said that they don't want to pay. Well, what four people did you talk to? What about the people that want the board? No one's speaking for them. I'm a landlord. I would rather not pay the extra money. But I've seen what it's done for downtown Bolton. I mean, it's night and day from the time that I got it to where it is now, the building. The improvements in the area are only going to benefit the landlords in the long run. It's a small price to pay. Maybe it has to be a shared cost between the landlords, the tenants, and the municipality. But to just get rid of a board because landlords don't want to pay extra money or a few people said that it's not working for them, well, what about the parts that are working? What's not working with the BIA? The only thing that I've heard is cost. What other things are not working for the BIA? And I don't think I heard one from anybody other than cost. People put in their time, they're not paid for that. All the board members put in extra time. I saw you on the weekend putting up flowers, fantastic. I seen other people planting, great. Those are things that the community is getting involved. People see that. People want to get involved. But let's not dismantle something that's not broken. The only part that doesn't work is the money. And that's with any business, with any household, it's always about the money. So let's focus on educating everybody that has a say so that they can make the right decision to see if the board should stay or not go. I support those motions, and I thank you for your time. If there's any questions.
I have a couple of questions for you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Tony, thank you for coming in. And I will say, Tony, you have done a great job with your buildings downtown Bolton. You have been over the years. You've continued to renovate those buildings. You've been very successful with some of the CIP grant money that we have. What you're just doing now with the windows looks wonderful. And so thank you for doing all that, for looking to improve. And your building's right on the corner, so it's a nice spot, and it looks great. I just want to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned, Tony, and just for some clarification. You talked about that the board is top-heavy with more property owners than tenants. When the election was held, there was an opportunity for folks to come out, the membership to come out and vote for the members that they want to have sit on the board. That was a choice by the members. It was a very democratic process that was followed, and they voted those members in. You touched on the fact about the process. The process is flawed, and I'm guessing you're talking about the process that took place at the board meeting to talk about disbanding that. Is that what you're talking
no,
about?
No, I'm talking about any process, even when I was with the board, of getting a hold of landlords. Somebody mentioned earlier that they can't get the list because we can't give them the list who the landlords are. There's only so many people in the downtown core. There might not be an official list, but there's a list. But somehow, every meeting we've ever had, there's always somebody that's come there and says, I never got the notice. I didn't get this. So somewhere along the road, it happened again. Not everybody got the notice. Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, Tony, it's the same as here. When council holds a public meeting or sends notices out, you always have people that say, well, I never got a notice, and why didn't you send me a notice? So it's not that the process is flawed, it's just sometimes it might not get to the person. So I don't know that it's a flawed process, but anyway.
Well, maybe a flaw in that part of the process.
Okay, guys, okay. We're getting into debate here, just questions only,
you
please.
You talked about that there's structure was there prior to this board. Is that, I think that's what I heard you say, that structure has always been there?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Okay, so you talked about structure. So structure, as I know, for all the years I was on the BIA, has always been there. It's with this board and it's with previous...
That's not true.
It's with previous boards.
That's not true.
Well, I think...
Tell you for a fact that when I started with the board, there was no bylaws, and they weren't following the rules, so I know for a fact. And that's when Rob came in as a counselor, and that was one of the reasons I joined the board, to make sure that we had some bylaws. And there were some rules being followed. So,
well, maybe through
okay.
You to the clerk.
I'm
going to
a
different
girls.
Debate than that. Not right now.
I'm not debating. Yeah, maybe well. Through you to the clerk, she
What's
can
your
provide.
Question to me?
I'm asking okay. The clerk no, to provide some clarification on the structure of the board.
There's. Madam Clerk, if you can clarify that.
Through the Mayor to Councillor Groves, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking me. Does the BIA board have. They're actually. They are formed as part of under the Municipal Act, and they have requirements that they need to follow. They have bylaws, and if that's what you're
asking.
And
they've been following those bylaws.
As I'm not involved on a day-to-day basis with the BIA board, but I do communicate regularly with them to ensure that compliance is being held.
Perfect. Thank you. And I'm just going to address one more point when you're at the vote on the board. We talked about this earlier. There is a process in place. There's no decisions being rushed. As a matter of fact, no decision has been made yet. It's going to be going out to members. It is up to the property owners, including yourself, Tony, to notify your tenants. The tenants will have an opportunity to provide input, whether or not, and they will have a vote on whether or not they want the BIA to remain in place or to disband. So there is a process that has to be followed. The Municipal Act requires that process is followed, so it provides an opportunity for every member of the BIA to get involved and have their say. It's
is
the same process.
Is there a question with that, Councillor Groves?
It's the same process as you followed with the lifting of the cap. It'll follow the exact same process. Thank you.
What's the question? Oh, okay.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
I do have a question. I was wondering if you knew. I remember coming, not that long ago, the BIA asked for some grant money, and I can remember they put an application in recently, and it was turned down because the town said that the levy covers that, and that was one of the very recent, within the last year. So it concerns me that because you have the levy, the town assumes that it's all your responsibility, therefore it's yours. So I can only speak to that one issue that came forward. Maybe, do you remember what that was?
To the treasurer?
Through yes. The chair, to Councillor Shaughnessy. There was a couple grant applications for, I believe it was the golf tournament. And it was for either the gazebo or a farmer's market, but at that time they did not meet the criteria since other boards were not, local boards of the municipality were not eligible to apply.
Exactly. So that's your challenge right there, is that there was an application for money, but because there's an existing board, you don't get any extra money from the town. And I think that would have helped you out. So I think what you said to us, and I'm going to ask you for clarification here, are you saying that if the town was willing to work with you guys, provide a little bit more money, then it would be nice to have the BIA going forward, or do you think that it's only the BIA money that should be paying for any sort of beautification downtown?
I absolutely agree with you that the municipality should be participating because they reap the benefits as well. People that drive down through the downtown core are saying, wow, look how beautiful Bolton is, look how beautiful Caledon is. So if you're getting some of those rewards, then you should be paying a little bit into it as well. I don't know what the proportion should be, but that's probably part of the solution to keep the BIA going.
And I think you're right, because I did a trail walk on the Sunday and the flowers were all done. And oh my God, it was absolutely magnificent. And I do believe you need to be teamed up with the town. I don't think the levy covers it all. So I think we need a better relationship. Thank you.
I agree. That'll give us even better buying power when we get flowers, because we're paying a lot more than if the municipality was buying thousands of them.
I understand Niagara on the Lake, the municipality there, they actually have their own greenhouses and they actually grow their own flowers. Wow. And Brampton does the same thing. Thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate the delegation.
Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. I'm only going to ask a question. I'm not going to make comment. Mr. Rumo, you made the comment that you didn't receive notification. Is that you didn't receive notification for the AGM?
No, I did receive for the AGM.
You did for the AGM?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Romo, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I will now call upon that. Point of order.
Yes.
I know we have two presentations, and in previous, and they were asked to be here between 8 and 9. I would suggest, rather than holding our guests for too long, that we listen to our presentations before we go ahead with the delegations.
You have the floor, Councillor Beffer. You called a point order. So do you have a seconder for this? If not, I'm going to have to move forward.
Yes, I have a seconder.
Okay. We have two presentations, but we do have a number of, we have one, two, we got three speakers yet to go. We can get through the speakers and then bring them right on after, before we get into the business, if you want to do that.
Possibly. I'm okay with that. I'm just concerned that in previous meetings, we've had our guests sit here for a couple of hours, and I don't want to see that.
So through the chair to Councillor Beffer, the clerk's office did contact the presenters and let them know that it may be a couple hours before we get to the presentations. But there is a motion on the floor, so council will have to vote.
I'll remove the motion.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I will now call upon...
So through the mayor to Councillor Beveridge, unfortunately, because the motion is in council's possession, you're unable to remove it. It requires council to vote it down or to put another motion on to withdraw it.
Seconder, Councillor Ennis, thank you. Moved by Councillor Gross. All in favor? Carried. All right. I will now call upon John Rutter to come approach the podium to provide a delegation concerning advertising ethics. Please note, according to the procedural bylaw, you have 10 minutes for your delegation, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, fellow councillors. Firstly, I would like to thank Mr. Mayor and his office for getting us a new version of O Canada. That was very nice. At least it was in a key that we could sing to. Thank you. Why am I here? I am here delegating before you since, in my opinion, a fellow resident of Caledon has been wronged. In my opinion, Cheryl Connors has not only been wronged once, but she has in fact been wronged twice. Once in a social media blog, and secondly, here in these council chambers last week during her delegation. Since last night, I have spent a lot of time on the computer, and I'm not that computer literate, so it was an effort, trying to get my head around Skid Creese's blogs, as well as inform myself about Just Saying Caledon. I found Skid's blogs to be very far-reaching in scope, very opinionated, and whenever he blogged about town, Caledon Town Council or town councillors, it was very obvious that he had his favorites and his non-favorites. It does concern me when I read, and I quote, "Never retract, never explain, never apologize. Get the things done and let them howl. It further concerns me tremendously that he would find it necessary to create such a blog as is before you. Where do I put this, Devin? On. Thanks. I won't read this. You can read it for yourselves. It concerns me tremendously that he would find it necessary to create such a blog as is before you about a Caledon resident that he has never officially met, does not know, and has never contacted for an interview to seek out her views on specific issues. In my opinion, this type of journalistic blog is definitely a form of bullying. To quote our former provincial premier from one of her recent councillors, thank you. To quote our former provincial premier from one of her recent speeches, the best way to deal with a bully is to stand up and push back. Well, we are standing up and we are looking to you to push back. Relative to just saying Caledon, I would be the first one to admit that it is a wealth of information about Caledon. Unfortunately, I did feel that Patty Foley, having been a previous town councillor, could be sensed sometimes in both format and content. Her formerly being a town councillor could be sensed sometimes in both format and content. To quote Skid Crease once again, he says, one of the skills we possess is the ability to look for the patterns that connect. Well, one doesn't have to look too far to discover a pattern that connects Skid Crease and just saying Caledon. This delegation would be incomplete if it did not address the issue of freedom of speech, a freedom enshrined in our charters of right and a freedom which I personally cherish and carefully try not to abuse. However, this freedom of speech does not give oneself the freedom to ignore the possible consequences and impact which such blogs, editorials, etc., may have on any said person. Skid Crease has been contacted and offered an opportunity to explain and maybe even apologize to Cheryl, but unfortunately through a series of blogs he declined. Patty Foley was also contacted by email requesting that she publish a statement which would distance herself and her publication from Skid Crease and his degrading blogs. She declined. As mentioned above, in my opinion, Cheryl Connors was wronged for a second time in these chambers last Tuesday afternoon at the end of her delegation. As per procedural bylaws, council members are entitled to ask questions of the delegate, usually intended for points of clarification, etc. Well, last week, one councillor in particular was permitted, with no intervention by the chair, to go on a rant, or should we call it a lecture. This rant lasted so long that the delegate could not remember if there was actually a question asked, or if so, what the question was. Then we heard the episode of the councillor banging on his desk, shouting, "Why are we doing this? What does she want us to do?" Then we had numerous councillors state that this type of harassment, bullying, is nothing new. They, as politicians, experience it all the time and as such have developed a thick skin. Well, my response to that is that if these councillors had dealt with it at the time and called it out for what it actually was, then maybe we wouldn't be here this evening. Also last Tuesday, as part of the agenda package, we were provided with a memorandum from Mr. David Arbuckle. One of David's comments was, quote, "While the town does not have an existing policy related to the town advertising practices, staff does exercise good judgment and monitors our advertising partners from a content perspective, which factors in part to decision making." Well, Mr. Arbuckle, through the chair to yourself, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but from a resident's point of view, maybe we should be developing an advertising policy, or at least, since there is taxpayers' money involved in these decisions, we should be putting more emphasis on content perspective. In conclusion, I am a firm believer in Councillor Shaughnessy's motion in its original format. By eliminating paragraphs 3 and 5, you have eliminated the essence or intent of the motion, with that being one of accountability and being held accountable to your actions. I further feel that Cheryl Connors deserves an apology from both Skidcrease and as well this council. On a lighter side, I would like to feel that should I or my wife be in the position that Cheryl Connors is in and had been the target of such an abusive blog, that somebody from this wonderful township of Caledon would stand up to the plate and, as I am saying now, you have been wronged. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I got a question.
Probably not a question, probably a comment or a statement. First, thank you very much.
Councillor Shaughnessy, you can
you
do
haven't
that
heard
under
me
the
yet?
Motion.
You haven't heard me yet.
Make it a
I'm
question.
Allowed to ask a question.
Yes.
And actually it says comments in the thing. But you jumped on me pretty fast there, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I'm trying to keep the meeting moving here.
Well, this is really an important one.
Yeah.
And so now I've lost my train of thought for a moment. So now that'll take me a moment. Thank you. So in one of his blogs, he spoke about going after people who protect salamanders. I assume that was a direct blow on my people from Bell Fountain. I don't know, John, did you by any chance read that particular blog?
Well, no, I did not read that blog, but I did read the blog, and I have it here with me, which, in my opinion, and again, this is my opinion, this kind of goes to the frame of mind of the individual that we are talking about here. It says, "Unfortunately, I am an only child, alpha male, and if anything threatens my pack," and we won't speculate what his pack is, "I go on instant defense mode." So was the case when I was sent Crystal Facebook's blog about members of town council who I deeply respect. Sorry, Crystal, you attack mine, I eviscerate yours. Not exactly about salamanders, but...
In your opinion, you're a layman, and Mr. Skidcrease says he's a journalist. Do you think those words are those of a journalist, or do you think that's just the words of somebody who's just an angry individual?
I don't think those are words of a journalist, no. However, with the amount of time that I spent on the computer going through his blogs all the way back to last year, I would be the first one to admit that he covers a lot of scope, has a lot of comments, is critical of a lot of things, doesn't really offer two sides of the coin, it's his or none, but that's a lot more journalistic than this is. I just don't think anybody should have to go on a blog that's involved with anything relative to the town of Caledon and read this stuff.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rutter, for coming and standing up for one of our residents. Actually, you stood up for two. Neither one of those women. I agree with you. It's bullying, and it's bullying at its worst. So thank you for standing up for somebody else. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your delegation. Now I'll call upon Cheryl Connors to the podium to provide a delegation concerning advertising ethics.
Are you switching the order?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going with what I have here.
Yeah. Kathleen Wilson is joining me just because I my whole body is shaking. I want to throw up right now. I'm so uncomfortable having to have this conversation in a room with the man who sent threatening emails to me and has written threatening. I don't want to make myself any more of a target, but I'm terrified right now to have this conversation because I took those threats really seriously. For standing up to come and speak to this council. So I just have, I wanted to make a couple of little comments, but after I spoke last week about something I felt really strongly about, I never wanted to come here again. And a lot of people said to me, then the intimidation and bullying works, but I really never wanted to come here again. And then that's really what, then they'll be successful. But here's what I'm going to try to get back on track here. I came because I feel really strongly that we were identified by our gender. I feel that's hate speech. I think we're still waiting on comment. This is not journalism. I wanted to correct a couple of points because I was told I felt like I was put through a Spanish Inquisition in the questions, that I was lectured and scolded. I flinched every time the desk was pounded. And as a woman, and all of you, you know, many of you have daughters and wives. My father raised me, and he was such a respectful man, and my husband is here tonight because he's worried about me, and he's a respectful man, and I think we need to have respect, and that is what the Time's Up movement is about. But on that, I was told that I didn't care about social media. That statement was made. I just said that wasn't the topic we were speaking about. We were speaking about our public tax dollars being used to support a blog that I feel is propaganda. If you can just put that down. So I did a little search, and members of the media told me that legitimate journalism outlets have a social media code of conduct, that if any of them had written on a private social media blog what that particular individual had written, they would have been fired. So I want to read from that. So this was just one that I pulled up from the Communications Council Best Practice Guide, and it goes through guidelines. So here's public versus private, and it says, always start with the assumption that anything you say can be read about by anyone, anywhere, at any time. And remember that the internet has a long memory. Always exercise good judgment when posting and be aware that inappropriate conduct can negatively affect your organization's clients and yourself. Always apply the following test. Would my manager, client, or customers be happy to see this content published? This is a fabulous guide. It goes through, be transparent, be accurate, be professional. Be fair and respectful. Do not post content that is obscene, defamatory, threatening, or discriminatory to any individual, brand, or entity. And it goes through that. I think all of that falls into the comments that we've made. One of the reasons given for not taking any action against Just Saying Calden is that despite the blogger being listed as a writer and a Google search and links bring you did bring you straight to the comment that the publication itself did not carry hateful speech, but I just wanted to post up this comment that I saw on the Just Saying Caledon blog because I thought it was really, really bizarre, and it is on the Just Saying Caledon blog, related to an article about giving up plastic straws, which has been in the media a lot lately. If we can learn to stop assaulting our women in idling our cars, we can learn to suck it up and get rid of the plastic straws. That is on the Just Saying Caledon. It is a bizarre and disturbing comment. I'm not sure what kind of analogy we need to learn to stop assaulting our women and giving up plastic straws. But this is what we're spending our tax dollars on advertising for. Again, I would like to know what the reach is for that propaganda blog, that it justifies us spending our tax dollars on it. And I would like to say, finally, in my correspondence with the editor, what I asked the editor to do was to say a public statement, and this was what I wrote a week before when I first read it, that this blogger's misogynistic, hateful statements on his personal blog do not represent the values or beliefs of Just Saying Caledon. Then I got into my car after the meeting, after feeling battered, bullied, and beaten up by my delegation, never wanting to come here again. I got in the car and heard that Roseanne had been canceled. And I'd like to read that statement. I'm going to have to, yeah, so my eyesight is not good enough for that one. So because I found it just remarkable in the timing that I got in the car right after the delegation to find out that ABC had canceled one of the highest rated shows in network television because of the personal remarks of an actress in a private tweet. Not the Roseanne show itself making those comments, but because of the personal remarks of that actress. And the statement that they made was, Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values, and we have decided to cancel her show. That was from the ABC Entertainment president. And then Disney CEO Bob Iger added on Twitter that, and this is a direct quote, there was only one thing to do here, and that was the right thing. And this council chose not to do the right thing. And on this topic, I'm not going to take any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I'll go on to my next delegation.
Yes.
So my next delegation is on the Wayside Pit. And it's an aggregate issue, which I believe is the one that caused me to be targeted the last time. But I sat through the Wayside Pit delegation, and this is a topic very near and dear to me, because it was actually me that brought this to the last council's attention. It was my husband who actually saw an ad in the Caledon Enterprise that talked about stopping up and closing an unopened road allowance without any address being given about where the unopened road allowance it was. We are very concerned about this because there's an unopened road allowance next to the pit that is very close to our home. I came here and delegated to council on this. The two Flaherty pits, so in the financial discussion about this, and there are five sitting members of this council who were in the last council, and I know you have a lot of business that comes before you, but it seems that the story has changed about what the purpose of that Wayside pit was. And I want to clarify that because it has financial implications. I delegated here, stood in this very spot, and said, I don't understand why we're doing this Wayside pit. Both those Flaherty pits were finished and due to be rehabilitated. And creating the Wayside pit extended the life of those two pits. And I stood here and said, I, for one, would like to see a pit rehabilitated in my lifetime. Mayor Morrison said that the reason for doing that is because the unopened road allowance in the middle was at an unnatural elevation. So the idea was to remove that to flatten it all out. That was the reason, and you can go back and check the recording of that meeting in my delegation. I argued at the time that, what do you mean, rolling hills are natural? It's unnatural to make it, to flatten it out. So that was the reason. In all of the delegations, nobody ever presented this as this was supposed to be a money-making venture. And the staff on it always said, all the way through, that at best they hope to break even. So when this was presented last week, it made it sound like the town had done this for the purposes of going into an aggregate business as a money-making venture. So the second thing is, even at the time, the aggregate pit came first. There were no road projects. I pointed out that how a wayside pit works is you have a road project, so we're going to build this highway, and we need some gravel for it, and because it's close to where the project is, you open up a temporary pit to supply gravel to that project. In this case, it was always the intent to mine that unopened road allowance to get the gravel. And I was told again in the same delegation, well, we'll use the gravel around town. And I said, but that's not a wayside pit. And this got the attention of Gravel Watch Ontario, which is the Ontario organization representing community interests. And Mr. Shopton read a little bit of it, but they did a Freedom of Information request that's quite intensive that shows that went on for years. The correspondence, which I think was proponent-initiated because that gave Lafarge the ability to mine into the setbacks, which was quite lucrative for them, as well as getting the contract from the town of Caledon. And I have to talk faster on this. But the lawyer, I believe he was the lawyer for the town of Caledon, said he didn't understand why it's surplus land and not an unopened road allowance. So I'll just show that. So on this, it was very, very clear. This is under the aggregate policy manual that you cannot have a wayside pit in an unopened road allowance. So a full license is required. So the correspondence went back and forth between the town of Caledon, M&R Aurora District, and M&R Peterborough, which is where the central department overseeing M&R is located in Peterborough. And Peterborough said, absolutely not, must be a full license requirement, but they didn't want to go to the through the expense of doing a full license, which is how it ended up being, we'll turn this into surplus land instead. M&R Peterborough was very upset about this because this was clearly just, you know, poof, it's a surplus land, not an unopened road allowance anymore. It was really, quite blatant that you're just trying to circumvent the rules by declaring it surplus land. So interesting that many people keep referring to it as an unopened road allowance because it is surplus land, and that's the reason that it's surplus land. So it's still surplus land. I understand the two parcels of land are now for sale, and you now have a nice flat, and someone mentioned a potential development, and now you have one large flat piece of land with surplus land, not an unopened road allowance in the middle. So that's on that. The second thing that was disturbing to me about the retelling of this story was the lack of rehabilitation. And what I'm going to show you right now is this is the wayside pit, the standards that have been developed to support the Aggregate Resources Act. So that's the policy manual. The standards are law. So in the operational standards, it talks about 5.5, about all the topsoil and overburden has to be stored and where it is to be stored. And that's the really important part, because it says that topsoil is not allowed to be removed from the site. Based on the presentation last week, it appears that this topsoil was removed from the site. It's very clear this is the operational standard, so that's the law, that's the requirement. The topsoil should have been retained on site. If it was removed from site, I suggest somebody find out where it went, who got the money for it, why it was removed. But there was comments about that this was MNRF's responsibility somehow, that they should be enforcing rehabilitation, but it's not. And it's your pit. You were responsible for enforcing these regulations. So it's your responsibility that the topsoil was removed. So when you do the financial implications on this, then someone needs to find out what the cost is to bring that topsoil back. I would suggest you find out what happened to it first and get it put back. Did you make money? Is it sitting somewhere? But you know, this is why perhaps the town shouldn't be in the aggregate business. And then finally, I'm going to say that there are many of us in this community that are really, really knowledgeable on aggregate issues. Not because we want to be, and I'm a reluctant activist in this community, not because I wanted to be, because it was brought into my literally backyard, but through the years, we have gained considerable expertise, Mr. Sinclair, Mr. Shopton, others from Pitt Sense, myself, and if we had an aggregate advisory committee as required under the Town of Caledon's official plan, I think you would find that we would be very helpful, and dialogue is always helpful. Like, this is such an adversarial process when you're sitting there and we're sitting there and putting everybody in a room and having discussion, having the aggregate operators in. You know, only good things can happen, and that's what I think should have happened here. I will say MNRF Peterborough office has assured Gravel Watch Ontario that this will never happen again. Never again will they ever allow a wayside pit to be approved under false pretenses. So that's that. And on this one, if anyone has a question, I will answer questions. Thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you. Thank you for your advocacy. And every time you come to council, you educate council members, because unfortunately, council is not educated on aggregate, and it would be really helpful if we were. So maybe moving forward in the future, that's something that we need to do, a major workshop on that. But I have a question for you. You showed some guidelines there. Mm-hmm. Lafarge, would they not have known and understood those guidelines, what they had to abide by?
Absolutely. So I don't know what your contract with, because they were your operator on the site. So you know, whether the people working that particular site are not familiar with operational standards, that's a question for whoever was managing the project from the town to speak to your operator about, to ask them why the topsoil was removed.
So the largest aggregate producer in the world let us down and should know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Connors. And I'll move on to committee recommendations. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor McClure, that May 29th, 2018 General Committee meeting report recommendation regarding the consent item, staff report regarding traffic signage for two new elementary schools in Mayfield West be adopted. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Shaughnessy, that the May 29th, 2018 General Committee report recommendation regarding McLaren Wayside Pit update on financial costs be adopted. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much. I'm just wondering if the financial update, we could also find out how much Lafarge took out of that pit and what financial benefits they reaped from that. Is that something that we could find out along with the financial update on the Wayside Pit?
Mr. Wong.
Mayor Thompson, believe, if I understand correctly, I'm being requested to report on what a private sector company has earned and profited from this venture. It's not something that we do. I certainly have no issue reporting on the town's costs, the town's revenues related to this project.
Do we know how much they removed? Because I was told the other day that nobody put a weigh scale there, so we're not quite sure. So I'm not sure. Do we know how much was actually removed? I mean, when you pull, okay, I think what most people don't understand is that you have the right-of-way, and then you have the berms on either side, and there's the 30-meter setback. How do you know when they bulldoze it down what was ours and what was theirs? I'm not quite sure how that sort of figures. So did anybody keep any records on what was actually pulled out?
Mr. Wong.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I was asked to prepare a report for June 26 on this, and what I am gathering the information for the report. I think at this time there's a lot of information out there in terms of no weigh scales and so on. I can tell you that for that report, I will clarify that there were weigh scales at the facility. We have weigh tickets. But I'd like to save that for the report for June 26.
That's fair enough. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor Mizzipelli, that May 29, 2018, General Committee meeting report recommendation regarding advertising ethics be adopted. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to make an amendment.
Okay. Does the clerk have a copy of it?
No, I have a copy here. I only have one. No.
Do you have a seconder? Councillor Groves? Okay. Okay, moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, second by Councillor Groves, that it would be an offense under the town's code of conduct for a member of council to make statements about fellow members and staff or residents claiming that they are witches and bitches and must be eviscerated. Got it. Then it would also be improper to endorse by way of funding a website or a blog which has links to such statements. Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Are you okay?
Go ahead.
Amanda?
Well, through you, Mr. Mayor. So the motion's not written as an amendment to the original motion.
Okay.
So looking at it, it's not able to serve as an amendment as it's written. Similarly, this is the same way. So this is not an amendment to the motion that was discussed at the May 29th meeting. This is more formulated as a notice of motion.
No, that's the motion, and I've just put the amendment in there. That's an amendment, believe me. I think we heard the same thing about Councillor Mezzapelli.
All right, I'm going to call a five-minute recess.
That's
great. The clerks to look at
Thank
this
you.
If we
that's
could.
Fine.
Okay, I'm going to call 5 minutes. And so, Madam Clerk, you want to tell me what we're doing here?
Thank you, Your Worship. So, yes, there was a motion that was put on the floor that's not formatted in such a way that it can actually be an amendment to the original motion. So it is in the possession of Council, so that does require a motion to withdraw the motion on the floor and then a new amendment can be placed. Do we have a motion to withdraw?
Yes. Councillor Groves?
We need a motion to withdraw.
Okay.
Shaughnessy?
Yep. Sure. Councillor Innes, you got a procedure? Yes.
If they withdraw and it passes, then they can present their motion. However, if their withdrawal fails, does that mean that the main motion that gets voted on and then they would require two-thirds to reopen it up?
No. So if the withdrawal fails, they can put forward another amendment, and then the amendment is on the floor.
Even though the intent of the amendment is the same as the amendment that's before you.
So through the chair to Councillor Ennis, the motion, the way it was worded, is improper. So it's not within really your ability to vote on.
So this is why it's of advice that we speak to the clerk's office before we present our amendments and our motions.
Of course, that's always.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So let me make this clear. It's moved by Shaughnessy, second by Groves, that we withdraw the motion that has been moved for the May 29th, 2018. What's the amendment on the floor? Okay, all in favor to remove what was presented here before?
Yes, so we had a motion that was moved and seconded to put an amendment on the floor. The amendment is not formatted properly. So we now have a motion on the floor to withdraw that motion, the improper motion.
Okay. Does everybody understand now what we're doing? Yeah, the improper. Yeah, okay. Proper amendment we're withdrawing. Okay. All in favor? Carried. Okay. So we're back to the actual motion till this is the new one. Okay. Moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, second by Councillor Groves, that the following paragraph be added. That it would be improper to endorse the way of funding a website or a blog site which has links to such statements regarding as fellow members of council, town staff or residents as fellows as witches, bitches, and must be eviscerated. It's getting late. All right, Councillor Shaughnessy.
That is a hard word to say.
Well, tongue tight.
I get it. Okay, so this is before us because really what it was about the intent of what we were hearing, what our delegations have said to us, and it's certainly not anything you'd want to say to your wife or have said about your children or your kids. And as a council member, I couldn't stand up and tell Councillor Downey that she's a B-I-T-C-H without going through a code of conduct. So it's a level of respect, and it's not It's not silencing freedom of speech. It's about saying these aren't acceptable words, and we're not going to financially support them. And my concern is that, Mr. Mayor, it wasn't just your office; it's the library board supports this also, and I have a hard time. How we do that. So it's about saying this is not acceptable. We heard Ms. Connors feel like she had been raked over the coals by members of council, which I think there's a couple of people on council who owe her an apology, but I'll leave that up to you. I apologize for what happened and transpired the other day. But I think we have to say it's not acceptable. And if we don't, then we endorse the bullying behavior, and it's not acceptable. Councillor Ennis, is there something while I'm talking? Do you have to keep yakking in my ear?
Excuse me, I'll...
Excuse me. Point of order.
Councillor Shaughnessy, you have the floor.
Not appropriate, Mr. Mayor. So, it's on the floor. I see Councillor Groves has comments. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I supported the motion that was before us originally, and I support this motion as well. Mr. Rudder and Ms. Connors raised a number of points that were very valid points as citizens of this town. Ms. Connors talked about the Roseanne show, and that ABC, even though whatever she tweeted that was in her own personal tweet, ABC felt that it was important not to have her show on the air anymore because it represents ABC. She is employed by ABC. It represents ABC. I don't think that it's appropriate for our residents to feel that they have to be afraid to voice their opinions, to stand before us, to voice their concerns, and that they have to feel afraid because someone out there might write a blog and eviscerate is a very strong word. It's very scary. And I will tell you, that's not something that this town council should be condoning, that type of behavior. ABC did not condone the behavior of Roseanne, and even though that show brought in a lot of revenues, they didn't feel it necessary to condone her behavior. I don't think that this council should be condoning that behavior. I had a conversation with Ms. Connors, and I will tell you, I served as the executive director for a women's shelter. And one of the things that happens when these women come into the shelter is the first thing, they come in there very scared, and they feel, they blame themselves because their abuser makes them feel that it is their fault. It's their fault why the abuser takes a baseball bat to them. It's their fault why the abuser abuses them emotionally, mentally. It's their fault. My question to Ms. Connors outside is, when she was here last Tuesday, how did she feel? Did she feel that she brought this on herself because of the questioning, the comments that came from members of this council? Her answer was yes. This is not acceptable. Taxpayers' dollars should not go to funding anything that is associated with this type of behavior at all. I heard from this council where they defended the blogger, they defended Ms. Foley, and who was defending the rights of our citizens? I didn't hear anybody defending them. In fact, Ms. Connors made a good point. She said she felt like she was scolded. That's not acceptable. I'm sorry. Every taxpayer has the right to express their concerns, their opinions, without feeling afraid or feeling that they're being bullied. And I think Ms. Connors showed a lot of courage coming here for the second time after what she had to deal with from this council and standing here again, once again saying, this is not right. I certainly hope that this council will not condone this type of behavior, will not use public dollars to fund advertising on a blog that attacks citizens. It is wrong. I don't see anything, and we've heard all sorts of things on the news about these types of things, and nobody condones that. They fire those people right away. And I don't believe that this council, again, I will say, should not be using taxpayers' dollars to fund advertising that bullies, threatens, and makes other citizens afraid. So I'm happy to support this amendment. I supported the motion last Tuesday. I think it's unfortunate. I was embarrassed by what this council did to Ms. Connors, and Ms. Connors, I will publicly apologize to you. I don't think that you or anyone else should be subjected to that. I think you have the right. This is what this country has been founded on, democracy. freedom of speech. This council defended freedom of speech from the blogger, but did not defend your freedom of speech. You have the right, just like any other citizen in this country. That is why I love this country. This country was founded on that. So please accept my apology to you, to your family. You have a child, to your husband. I think it's wrong. Ms. LaRoche was also, she's afraid because she has a business. She's afraid of retribution. It is not right. So I'm happy to support this. Thank you.
Councillor Beffert.
Well, first of all, no one should stand up in front of this council and feel like they have to be nervous or feel like they have to be afraid or feel like they shouldn't be there. And certainly if any of my actions, including pounding the desk, had any kind of resulted in that, I do apologize. My concern, and it comes to this motion as well, is what part do I play in this? And I said last week, I don't want to be a judge and a jury, because I really believe that if someone has done something to offend you, or you, then that person, you've got to go to someone who can make a difference. I'm not sure. I know the funding is part of what we're talking about here, but let me give you an example. I see on the screen, witches, bitches must be eviscerated. I have no idea where that showed up. First of all, I don't watch any blogs, and I don't know whether we fund any blogs. So I'll ask through you, Mr. Mayor, do we fund any blogs?
I can say through our office we don't. I'll ask Mr. Arbuckle as far as town staff.
Through the chair to Councillor Beffert, from an advertising perspective, if that's the question, we're not advertising directly on specific blogs other than we have in the past advertised on Just Saying. If you can, it all depends on what you're considering a blog specifically.
Okay. But what is Just Saying considered as? I see a website and a blog, and I'm old, so I don't know which is which. I truly don't understand the difference. Where did this show up? Did it show up on a website? Were those words actually put into Just Saying as part of something that Just Saying had their journalists do? Or was it on a private blog somewhere else that had nothing to do with Just Saying? You can see my dilemma. I'm trying to figure out at what point do we have a responsibility. And if this gentleman is writes for something, but he did it on his own time, on his own blog, and puts it out to whoever, because it's sure not me, then I don't have any part to play in it. And that's where I'm having the difficulty. It's not that I don't want to make a decision. It's this, that I don't want to make a decision when nothing's really been proven with regard to that blog. So that's where I'm coming from, and I'll listen to the rest of the discussion.
Okay. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I believe Mr. Rutter showed part of it, and I'm happy to put up the blogs also on the website. It is clear that, I'm sorry, you're not, we're talking about the website Just Saying. She supports Skid Crease in that when you go to her website, you can click and immediately go to his and see those words. I'm not making up these words, Doug. These are what he says about women. Witches and bitches, and I will eviscerate yours, meaning I will debowel your family members, your friends. This is unacceptable at the most minuscule level. And I think to even justify, I can't believe we're even arguing this again, because it is so obvious that any legitimate news organization would have fired Mr. Skid Crease would have fired him. If the Enterprise did that, oh, yes. Don't shake your head no, Mr. Befford, because actually, you were shaking your head no.
Excuse me.
Excuse me. I'm sure people in the council could have seen it. I am saying that they provided the code that would have required somebody to be removed. If somebody in your school had been doing this to one of your students, you would have come down on them really hard. I think the fact we have to defend our residents. And it's our responsibility to say, we don't want Town of Kelland taxpayer dollars going to support Just Saying whether they're our friends or not. We don't want our money going because she puts a disclaimer on her blog, which means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. That it's not her, she doesn't support anything on her blog. Well, I'm sorry, in a court of law, that doesn't stand up. Somebody could take her to court on it. So I think, Mr. Rutter, I think you showed the blog where it says bitches and witches. That's correct. Okay, we saw it up on the screen. So we're not saying anything that you don't already know. So I guess it comes down to whether you don't have a problem providing Ward 1's taxpayers' dollars to support somebody who berates women. And that's what it is coming down to, it berates women. And it's not acceptable at any level. And I brought it up because I have another apology here from him where he's going after anybody who goes after aggregate pit producers or if you save the salamander. That's why I brought up Bell Fountain, because they actually have a community day. Sorry, Councillor Downey, it's not funny. They have a community day, which is called Save the Salamander. It's a salamander day.
Councillor
so are they
Shaughnessy,
going after
please.
Them? I'm Be speaking, respectful. Mr. Mayor. He talks about open season, so he uses words like my pact. That's an animal thing. My pact. It's open season. That means he's saying open season on anybody. That's a hunting term. When you start putting everything together and, say, eviscerating it, I guess he's going to hunt you down, and then he will debowel you. This is unacceptable, Mr. Mayor. You should not be spending taxpayers' dollars from the mayor's department on ads and Just Saying. I don't care whether she was a past counselor. I don't even think she lives in Caledon anymore. So that's what we're saying. And so we clarified it here. Witches, bitches, and that I will eviscerate you. It's not acceptable. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. I just have a question. While I don't speak to be a guru in blog posts, I'm probably a little bit in the middle. So, Councillor Beffert, you're on one side, and I'm not quite on the far side. I'm somewhere in the middle. It keeps sounding to me like there's a link from the Just Saying site to the blog post. I can't find one. And if you want me to vote on something that you're saying has happened, you need to provide me some proof. You need to, the website's right here. You can go live and click it onto this and you can show us where the link is because I can't find it. I have searched. I have searched his name on the list as a guest author. There's nothing directly linking his blog post to the Just Saying. So if it was there, I'm sure you've screenshot it because I know you guys have screenshotted a bunch of stuff. Just show me so that we know that it's actually there, because right now I'm looking on this site. I can't find it. And it's very difficult for me. You're putting something right before me and asking me to vote on it without actually providing any proof to me that this has occurred. Everybody, a couple of people around this table have said that it is the way. Without Just Saying being here to justify themselves or to defend themselves, I'm just concerned that we're making a decision on something without any actual proof before us that there was a link. If there's a link, then there's an issue. I can't find one. But if you want to show me here where it is, I'd be happy to have a look at it.
Well, I think that's the key. there is a link, and she is always linked to Ms. Foley. Posts a lot of the things that Mr. Kreese writes because it's a link that she shares on Bolton, Caledon 411. I'm from a little town called Bolton. I am certain that many of you, some of you that sit around this table, you're monitoring those sites. So you would have seen some of the links that Ms. Foley shares, that Mr. Kreese writes. That is the point here. They are connected directly. He is listed as one of her writers on her site. So I'm not sure what more you need as proof to show the connection here. I will go back to Mr. Rutter's point. ABC fired someone who was making them loads of money on their show because she tweeted something that was inappropriate. Ms. Foley has Mr. Kreese listed as one of her writers. She, from time to time, shares those links, and I have seen them. I'm not very good on social media and savvy and take screenshots. I don't even know how to take screenshots. So I'm not very good at that stuff, but I'm going to tell you I've seen links. I've seen some of it where she's berated me, and so has Mr. Kreese, but I just don't pay attention to that. What really bothers me is this, when you're calling citizens these sorts of things and threatening them. It's very threatening. That's what I have a problem with. And Councillor Innes, I will tell you that there is a connection there through the links that she shares. Now, they remove things all the time. Ms. Wilson has something there, and you want proof. I'm not sure, Mr. Mayor, if you will allow that, because you're asking for proof, and I think that if there is proof, we... Okay. Skid Kreese, author at Just Saying. Is that what I'm looking at?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I just Googled.
No, you can't. You can't.
Okay. So, author, Skid Kreese, Squash Blossom Food, Skid Kreese, Garden Pot Avenger, Albion Hills Community Farm, Patty Foley Publisher. So, there is a link right there. It tells you there is a direct link. He writes for Just Saying. So, to the point here that's been made is that taxpayers' dollars should not be funding this sort of thing when they are attacking their own taxpayers. Your taxes fund this as well. So
okay.
I don't know what the difficulty here is, because we all know, and I think every single one of us around this table, we should stop pretending, and we should. We all know that Mr. Kreese and Ms. Foley are connected directly with those blogs that they post. So I don't know what else you need.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
It also talks about being speaking to the environmental issues as well. So I think I'd like to get back to the motion that we actually have, and it asks staff and tells staff that the corporation adhere to its previous practice of advertising ethics and fiscal responsibility to its ratepayers, and cease to spend tax dollars supporting any publication, whether online or in print, that promotes hate journalism or intimidation. That covers everything, and it allows staff the responsibility, or gives staff the responsibility, to ensure that we are advertising and spending our dollars properly. And we shouldn't be, as our role here, we shouldn't be directing specific publications online, or whether it's in print. But we want staff to keep that in mind when they go to it. We can't talk about specific locations, but we should be directing staff to look at across the board. So today, this one might be the issue. There might be an issue somewhere else on another online blog or website, whatever it is. And this gives staff the responsibility that when they advertise, they need to do some work to ensure that they are following the standards that we have set out as council. I don't agree with the statements that are there, but I think that we need, I know that what we need to be doing is giving staff the direction that we expect them to adhere to this kind of a policy where we're being responsible in where we advertise and where we and how we spend our money. And this is exactly what it's giving staff to do, which is exactly what we should be doing in directing staff. And getting away from specifics, because we are here to set policy and we shouldn't be looking at specifics. Because what's to say that there aren't other words that, besides the three that are here, that staff might consider at some point in time that would be more or some other reason to not consider advertising. But I think we're giving staff the direction with the motion that exists here today. We're not directing at any one specific publication, but it is the answer to what we are, or what's been put for us today. So I think I'll continue to support the resolution that's here before us, because it is what we need to be directing staff to do.
Okay. No further questions. I will call the vote. I'm sorry, Councillor Shaughnessy, you've spoken twice. Yep.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called on the amendment on the floor. All those in favor, please stand. Councillor Shaughnessy, Councillor McClure, and Councillor Groves. All those opposed, please stand. Councillor Mazzapelli, Councillor Innes, Mayor Thompson, Councillor Beffert, Councillor Downey, Councillor DeMore. Motion failed.
Back to the original motion. I think it's we better read the full motion here on advertising ethics. Whereas the corporation of the Town of Caledon has in the past refused to advertise in publications that do not demonstrate or represent the values and integrities of the ethics of the Canadian Association of Journalists. And whereas the ethics of the Canadian Association of Journalists stipulate that we do not allow our own biases to impede fair and accurate reporting, and that therefore would be result that the corporation of the Town of Caledon adhere to its previous practice of advertising ethics, fiscal responsibility to its ratepayers, and cease to spend tax dollars supporting any publication, whether online or print, that promote hate journalism or intimidation. Recorded vote. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much. My problem with the motion is that it was completely gutted from the last meeting, just to make it close to worthless. But beyond that, is that there is no definition here at the Town of Caledon for hate or for intimidation. It leaves it to be subjective. In case you didn't understand, council members, hate and intimidation was the bitches, witches, and the eviscerating yours was intimidation. But without, unless somebody here at the Town of Caledon of staff can tell me if under the Town of Caledon, is there any definition for hate or what was the other one? Intimidation. Do we have a
Stroll.
What does it mean?
Through the mayor to Councillor Shaughnessy, I don't have a specific definition for either of those at the moment.
At the moment. So it means nothing then. So that's my problem. The other motion at least clarified that what was hate and what was intimidation. So now it's subjective. And when I had a meeting with the Town of Caledon on the memo, it's the Town of Caledon just looks after the corporate interests. It's not looking after the residents. It's not looking after us as council members. So who's going to be monitoring this? Like, are we leaving this up to the mayor's, to Mr. Mayor, to decide what is hate and what is intimidation? I need to know, because he actually places his own ads. Is it up to the library board to decide what is hate or what is intimidation? I'm asking the question of staff. Who decides in the mayor's department, in the mayor's office, what is hate and what is intimidation? And who will decide at the library board and the town of Carleton corporate office what is hate and what is intimidation? I think those are simple questions.
Mr. Arbuckle.
Through the mayor to Council Shaughnessy. So in relation to the library, we do have constant communication with both their communication staff and the CEO in relation to their advertising. So again, we can work with them and again, provide them with some advice in relation to how they are doing some of their advertising. As well as the mayor's office, we work very closely with them in relation to the development of any advertising they're going through and providing that support to them. And we can provide that similar level of guidance to them as well.
My problem and my concern with that is that the office here at the town of Caledon didn't bother to see that intimidation in those words. It's not something that you told me you don't monitor that. You're just looking, you're monitoring whether the corporation is getting whatever they thought they were getting. You're not monitoring whether they're beating up on a resident, actually numerous residents. You're not monitoring whether they're tearing apart council members. So, you know what, David, I'm just trying to understand how anything is going to change after this motion.
Mr. Arbuckle.
So through the mayor to Council Shaughnessy, so what was described before in relation to our role from a communications perspective is, number one, is in relation to reputation management from the town perspective. So from a corporate perspective, is our reputation being managed appropriately? So what we did say in the memo specifically is that we do monitor all of our advertising partners and the content of those partners, and we use good judgment in relation to where and how we should be spending our advertising dollars.
Okay, so now we're back to a week ago. Where after I had that discussion, I was really misled by that memorandum because I understood that you only monitor from the corporation's point of view, that nobody had read all this stuff that he keeps putting out. So I guess I need to know, is somebody reading and saying it's okay to tell Ms. Connors that she can get eviscerated, or the LaRoche lady, whoever she is, that she can get eviscerated, or that women are bitches and it's okay? Is the town of Caledon corporate department actually telling me that you think that's okay? I'm sorry, I need to know.
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor, to Councillor Shaughnessy, I'll take a shot at this because the question is the same question from the last time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that from a private, there's a number of social media avenues out there. There's obviously Facebook, there's Twitter, there is private blogs, and those social media avenues are personal. They're owned by an individual. What Mr. Arbuckle has explained is that what we look at specifically is we look at the media that reports, such as the Caledon Enterprise. There's a number of other widespread publications online as well as in print, obviously, as well. And those are what Mr. Arbuckle is referring to. If your question is, and maybe I'm not understanding your question fully, but if you're asking the question, do we monitor every Caledon individual Facebook, blog, or Twitter account? The answer is no.
That wasn't my question, sorry. And I appreciate you tried to answer. I guess it's difficult for the corporation to answer. So I'm not talking about monitoring blogs, but I am talking about monitoring the ones that we put money towards. I am talking about that kind of accountability, Mr. Galway. We have to be accountable for where we spend our money. I spoke to David. He doesn't have the reach for just saying, we don't even know whether it's a good buy or a bad buy. It's probably a bad buy. Well, it's a bad buy if it's the citizens because they get to say whatever they want about the citizens. So how are we judging these? I know that there are friends of Patty Foley's who make these decisions, and I know she's friends with members of council here, but this is actually kind of sick right now. I'm feeling as nauseous as Ms. Connors is, because this shouldn't even been gone this far. This should have been like Roseanne gets kicked out of a big, huge show because she happened to say something on a personal blog. I'm not talking about Mr. Personal Blogs, Mr. Galway. I'm talking about a blog and a website that we pay money to, which is a whole different thing. So I don't know how you even begin to justify this. It's not justifiable. It's just plain not justifiable. So, anyways, waste of time. Thank you.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you. I'm just going to read something from our procedural bylaw under section 6.1.1 as it relates to members of council and how we should be conducting ourselves. And on point C, not to speak disrespectfully of the reigning sovereign, any member of the royal family, and the Governor General, Lieutenant Governor General, the head of the government of Canada or the province of Ontario. Not to use offensive words or insulting expressions at any time, including speaking in a manner that is discriminatory in nature based on an individual's race, ancestry, place of origin, citizenship, creed, gender, sexual orientation, age, color, marital status, family status, or disability. Treat the presiding officer, other members of staff, and the delegates from the public with courtesy, respect, and good faith. I don't think Ms. Connors was treated with courtesy, respect, or good faith when she showed up here last Tuesday, and I don't think she's being treated that way today either. We have a proceed in our procedural bylaw that tells us how to behave towards the public, but we have nothing that says when a member of the public attacks another member and we are supporting, financially supporting that person or advertiser or online publication or blogs or website or whatever they are, there's nothing to govern that. I find that really hard to believe. And last Tuesday, I reminded folks in the audience and this council that a newspaper showed up in town many years ago, and this town and this council did not like what the newspaper was writing about decisions made at this council, and they chose to pull their advertising dollars from that newspaper. Not only did we choose to pull the advertising dollars, we canvassed other businesses not to advertise in that newspaper. So I don't see the difference here, really. I really don't see the difference, and I'm having a really hard time understanding why this is so difficult. It's very clear to me. This is taxpayers' dollars that we are using to enable someone to attack our own citizens. Mm-hmm. It's very clear that that is not acceptable.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called. All those in favor, please stand. Councillor Mazzapelli, Councillor Innes, Mayor Thompson, Councillor Befford, Councillor Downey, Councillor DeBoer. All those opposed, please stand. Councillor Shaughnessy, Councillor McClure, Councillor Groves, motion carried. Thank you.
Moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, second by Councillor McClure. That at May 29th, 2018, General Committee meeting report recommendation regarding the Caledon Equestrian Park update be adopted. All in favor? Carried. I saw a show of hands. We're good. Moved by Councillor Misapelli, second by Councillor McClure, that the May 29th, 2018 General Committee meeting report recommendation regarding Bolton Business Improvement Area Fact Sheet be adopted. And okay, we got an amendment to this. Moved by Councillor Misapelli, second by Councillor Innes, that the following paragraph be added, that a fact sheet include the information about the BIA levy, associated costs with the BIA members cannot individually opt out. No further questions. All in favor? Carried. Now back to the original motion. Oh, we've got another one here. Okay. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Downey, that the following paragraph be added to direct to work with the chair of the BIA in creating the fact sheet. All in favor? Councillor Misapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I won't support this, and for one, actually for a few simple reasons. One is this was a request I made at the BIA table, and it was denied. So my concern is what that might look like in through this exercise as proposed in the motion. I'm not ever supportive of excluding dialogue and consultation, but the experience at the board level led me to believe that there was absolutely no interest in this whatsoever. And my ask of staff was to take objective, factual information, which are showed in previous AGM year in reviews of what the BIA does, not to mention that this may add a time factor, which I don't know if it'll be an issue or not, but I know staff will do a good job of getting an objective, factual list together, which is just the facts. I added the part about the money and not being able to opt out. It was fair. It's factual. But I won't be supporting this because my concern is, to Ms. Carberry's point, it will be subjective. There will be opportunity. Staff have no interest whatsoever to be subjective. They are given the marching orders, sorry for the term, but and they will report it as fact, as directed, objective factual information, and that is all that we can ask that be included in the fact sheet. So I won't be supporting it because I have good experience that tells me that staff will manage this well, and it will be factual and biased as suggested in the motion that's already been endorsed. Thank you.
Councillor DeBoer.
Okay, just to be quick, I respect Councillor Mazzapelli's thoughts and about the issue, and I know that he's been quite involved with the organization since he's got on council. But I do think that listening to the chair tonight, I think there should be, and staff are going to be managing it, but I don't think that there's any harm in allowing the chair to participate in reviewing and looking at the fact sheet and making it that we're doing it together.
All in favor? All in favor? Carried. Now back to the original motion. Do you want a recorded vote on this?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Clerk. Oh, sorry, Councillor Groves.
You would like to see the main motion? It's in the package.
Well, it was indeed, this is the main motion right here.
Yeah, I know, but it's not the full motion because the motion.
Full motion.
Can
Councillor Groves, it's in the package I provided to you earlier. It's on. So, through your worship, it is the first motion up at the top of the page. That's on the screen.
So I just need some clarification. So last time I did not support this motion because I felt that this motion interfered with a democratic process that the BIA held. Councillor DeBoer put an amendment, and I support Councillor DeBoer's amendment because I think that that's what I heard Ms. Carberry ask for, is that they are included in that process when this, before this fact sheet goes out, so that the fact
Councillor Groves, here, I'm going to read the two amendments that you weren't here for.
The one is
the fact sheet be included of information about the BIA levy, associated costs that the BIA members cannot be individually opted out. And the second one is staff be directed to work with the chair of the BIA in creating the fact sheet.
I support Councillor DeBoer's amendment. I was here for that one, and I think that's what Ms. Carberry asked for. So this way it provides something that is unbiased, and having them included in that process, I'm fine with it.
Okay. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called on the amended motion. All those in favor, please stand.
Not her button.
Thank you. So all those standing, for all those in favors, please stand. For the record, all have stood. Carried unanimously.
Moved by Councillor Misipelli, second by Councillor McClure, that the May 29th, 2018 General Committee report recommendation regarding the Bolton business. We've done that. Well, I've got to sign it, sorry.
This is the second motion.
It's the same one. And the fact sheet be adopted.
To your worship. So there was two motions that were passed at the May 29th meeting. This one is specific to when the town receives notice of the tenants, that the town then send that fact sheet directly to the tenants.
Okay. At the May 29th General Committee report, recommendation regarding Bolton Business Improvement Area notice and fact sheet to tenants be adopted. I understand. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Ennis, second by Councillor DeBoer, that May 29th, 2018 General Committee report meeting. Report recommendations regarding the following items be adopted. Staff report 2018-62, annual provincial reporting on corporate energy consumption on greenhouse gases. Staff report 2018-64, 2018 community green fund. Staff report 2018-59, Main Street revitalization initiative. Staff report 2018-53, Ministry of Senior Affairs and Seniors Active Living Centers, grant approval, satellite programs in rural Caledon for aging population, and staff report 2018-26, 2018 capital status update report. All in favor? All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor McClure, that May 29, 2018 Planning Development Committee meeting report be received. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Innes, that May 29th, 2018 Planning and Development Committee meeting report recommendations regarding the following consent items be adopted. Staff report 2018-68, proposed zoning bylaw amendment, Northwest Holdings, 20-24 Samoana Drive, Ward 5. Staff report 2018-63, proposed zoning bylaw amendment application, Brentwood Development Corporation, Block 114-43M2042, 12782 Kennedy Road, file numbers RZ17-07. Staff report 2018-60, proposed Rogers Communication Tower, 12016 Shinkuzi Road, part of Lot 18, Concession 3 West, Ward 2, file number 14-43T. Staff report 2018-66, request to allow minor variance applications in the Coleraine West development area. Heritage Caledon report, May 14, 2018. Proposed heritage designation of Giffen Farmhouse, 12461 McLaughlin Road, Ward 2. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Misapelli, that May 29, 2018 Planning and Development Committee meeting report recommendation regarding staff report 2018-58, proposed zoning bylaw amendment to remove holding H symbol on Canop Properties Limited lots part 1 and 2 concession 1 east half Caledon Ward 1 be adopted. All in favor? Opposed? Carried. I will now call upon Stacey Dobb, President and CEO of Headwaters Health Center, to provide presentation concerning Imagine Headwaters and Planning Our Hospital Future Together.
Still on the mic? Okay, great.
Thank you for your patience tonight.
Not a worry. The office did call us earlier to let us know that you would be late, so we appreciate the heads up. And I know it's been a long night for all of you, so I hope to... I'm just going to check with you to see that this... we're just backwards. Okay, so I'm just going to go back to the beginning. So I'm coming here for a couple of reasons today. One, it is my belief I'm the new present CEO of the hospital. I've been there for about a year. Louise Kindry, who is a resident in Caledon, also happens to be the chair of the Headwaters Board, is joining me tonight. I believe it to be our responsibility to report back to the councils on one of their local hospitals, both in terms of its quality, but what it's up to and planning its future. And I do have two particular asks. I'm not asking you for any money, so I'll just put that out there right now. I know that we've been here before, but I'm not asking for money. I'm asking for some support. The materials were pre-circulated, but just want to highlight for council a couple of things. So Headwaters is a medium-sized hospital. It is a growing hospital in its local community, and I want to point out some of the things that are really important for the community in terms of its growth. Our women's and children's program is the fastest growing program that we have. In fact, we have people who come right across the region, right into Brampton, who are coming up to Headwaters to have their children. It is a very high quality program that is pretty much competitive and head above most programs in the province, and we're seeing dramatic growth in there. The second area is, any of you who have been by recently will see the big new building that was supported by many residents of Caledon. That's our new ambulatory care center, and that really is a step into the future. As people no longer want to be admitted for simple surgical procedures, we have a very large outpatient ambulatory care center, which really has a very key objective of helping people to get care closer to home. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was in the ambulatory care center. I was able to meet a farmer who was going through his third bout of cancer, and this was the first time he was able to get his cancer treatment in his local community. A young woman, mother, who just had two children, had twin daughters, was going through breast cancer treatment, was able to get her cancer treatment in her local hospital, have her husband visit her while she was going through chemotherapy. And that is the program that's growing the most. We partner right across the region to make sure that we're not going to do everything because we don't have the capacity to, and that's why partnerships are really important. We partner with Trillium for stroke. We partner with Southlake for cardiac and Willie Mosler for a number of programs, and really, I believe our quality is second to none. Our hospital is not just a place where people receive care. It is a major economic hub in the region with 705 staff, employed 150 physicians, of which the majority live in this region. And as importantly, I know Seniors Month is June. We have 275 volunteers, and it is an exceptional place for volunteers of all ages, youth and older adults to come out. Many of you have participated, I hope, in the fundraising for Headwaters as a citizen, and we are very privileged to receive about $2 million a year from our community and are very thankful for that. Many people don't know that that buys the most basic of equipment, from hospital beds to medication pumps, all the way up to major capital expansion like our ambulatory care center. I want to point out our performance for a moment. These are nationally comparative statistics related to safety, so whether that's in-hospital sepsis, readmissions, vaginal trauma, which sometimes happens in birth. We are head and shoulders above all of those safety measures, and we're also exceptional on experience, with 94% people feeling they're respected and recommending the hospital. And if you've ever been in Headwaters, what people will tell you is they feel different there. They don't feel like that number. They feel like they are really treated like friends and family. We have a real challenge, and this is a challenge that's not unique to Headwaters. It's unique to the 24 medium-sized hospitals that exist across this province, places like Lindsay, Aurelia. The ministry put in a funding formula about 5 years ago that very disproportionately affects medium-sized hospitals. And what has happened over the last number of years is we have seen our funding eroded year over year. So my one request of council, which I have made to the councils across Dufferin, is to support us in our provincial advocacy to make sure that medium-sized hospitals, and more specifically, Headwaters, receives equitable funding. We do not receive equitable funding right now, and it's a real challenge for us to be able to keep pace. And we are never, it's a fixed pie in the province. We are never going to be able to compete with places like Ajax that are growing with leaps and bounds. And so it's a fixed pie. Much of the money goes there. We need a new way of thinking about funding formulas to make sure that community hospitals stay viable and able to support their communities. These are just some examples of many other jurisdictions like Timmins, who is now operating their hospital with a line of credit given the erosion of their funding. We're not there, but we're certainly on that moving escalator towards that path if we don't see fair funding. The last one is we have launched a campaign called Imagine Headwaters. It is my opinion that it is not me or our board alone who should be deciding the future of the hospital, so we've been out on a large campaign. We have feedback from over 700 residents already and looking for more. And really, what we're asking you to do is to promote this on your local websites so that we can get more people to be sharing their ideas. We're not just using websites. We've been out in many regions. We're coming to farmers markets. I spent a day at Howard the Butcher, who is a very big supporter of ours, standing there reading local residents and talking to them about their local hospital. So would encourage you to promote this for us so that we can get as much feedback. I want to end on a very quick story to tell you about the importance of having a local hospital close by. In October of this year, last year, we had a gentleman walk into our emergency. His father dropped him off, his elderly father. He walked into our triage desk, collapsed. They very quickly took him into the back to try and figure out what was wrong with him, did an ultrasound, realized that he had an aortic aneurysm, which is the major pipe that goes to the rest of your body, had burst. It's almost 100% fatality anywhere that that happens. We knew very quickly that we would have to call Brampton to see if we could transport him down. We have very good relationships. They said, the vascular surgeon in Brampton said he would never make it down the highway. Instead, the vascular surgeon said, would your surgeon be willing to take him in, open him up? Our surgeon, Grace Wang, took him in. He asked if she could use these special clamps. She said, I haven't used those once, maybe in residency, but I'll do my best. Tried to use the clamps, could not. Put her hands in and hand clamped him. Well, the physician from surgeon, the surgeon from Brampton told us that he would jump in a car and come up. He jumped in an OPP cruiser, which he was then kicked out of, and had to find a paramedic to give him a ride, came up the highway, came into our team who had this individual stabilized in the surgery, did the surgery with him and saved his life. And that's why local hospitals are very close to people's homes and high-quality hospitals are important. So I look forward to your support, both in our funding advocacy to the province and planning the future of the hospital. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I have some questions for you.
Okay.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation, and I can attest to having a local hospital close to home. My stepmother had an aneurysm, had a stroke, massive stroke.
Yes.
Didn't get to her in time. She didn't survive it.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
Yeah. So I understand the need to have those services close to home, and I'm going to tell you, you're preaching to the converted, because I've been advocating for more urgent care centers for, yep. for my community, more always for more funding for hospitals, because I always believe in a pound of an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. And the key really to all of this is to prevent before we get to
correct.
Those crisis situations. So I certainly support you. And I can tell you that our Central West Lynn is the lowest funded Lynn in Ontario. And it's shameful because
that's correct.
We are
per capita for home care, for hospital care.
Absolutely. We are one of the fastest growing regions in Ontario. And we are at the bottom of the list. I've got seniors waiting for PSW support workers. I've had two residents that died waiting for PSW workers. Shame. So I certainly support you on your advocacy. Whatever I can do, I'm happy to do that. Peel Region has been forever saying we need our fair share of the funding.
Correct.
The Region of Peel is one of the lowest funded regions as well on many, many services. And you keep people healthy, you keep the economy healthy. When people are not healthy, the economy starts to tank because mm-hmm. you don't have people showing up to work, employers are left scrambling, and it's a snowball and a domino effect. So I'm happy to support you in whatever way you need to continue your advocacy. We have a new government. Well, we'll see who's coming in. Well, yes. We're going to have a new government coming in. We'll see who's coming in, and whoever is coming in, they all need to step up. Our MPP needs to step up, and all of the MPPs that's within your reach or your lens mm-hmm. and your counties to step up and start demanding their fair share of the dollars. You talked about farmers markets where you advertise. I'm happy to extend an invitation
that's
to
great.
You to attend our farmers market in Bolton. Please feel free to send me an email. Would love to have you set up a table there.
We will. We will take you up on that offer. Thank you.
Would love to have you because I think it's important that you're out there in the community mm-hmm. Explaining and getting support for your advocacy. So I thank you for everything that you do. I can tell you that my son and I, we've been to your hospital mm-hmm. a few times mm-hmm. and love it. You walk in there, it's wonderful. The expansion is great. I've been in there for day surgeries and
okay.
it
good
is
hear.
A great hospital, great staff. Physicians, nurses, the volunteers that you have, it's a wonderful hospital. So I congratulate you and your staff and all of those folks who are volunteering in the hospital to make it a quality hospital. Mm-hmm. So thank you for coming in. And the one thing you mentioned as well, you said there are some hospitals operating on lines of credit?
Yes, Timmins.
Well, I'm going to tell you, that's very sad when a hospital has to operate on lines of credit. That's when you're looking, there's crisis. You can see crisis right there. And what do we do as government? We react. We react. It's very expensive to react. I know, Mr. Mayor, I don't have a question, but I really think it's important that we support you in your advocacy for funding, and we continue to knock and pound on the government of Ontario's door to say our Central West Lynn, they need to put some more money towards keeping our residents healthy. Mm-hmm. So
It's okay, Councillor Groves. Yep. She's got a commitment out of you. That's important.
I'm happy to do that. Happy to do that. And please contact me to get into the farmer's market. Thank you.
Councillor McClure.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. I met you at the Headwaters Gala. And on the 26th of May, we had a good experience. I had grandkid number 11 born there. It was a C-section, but the staff were great. Everything was super. It was a good experience, and everybody's healthy.
That's good. That's good to hear.
Thank you.
It is true. The quality at Headwaters is very high. It's cultural. It comes from, there's a physician named Dr. David Scott, who was the first generation of physician. He handpicked the first generation of the physicians, and he set the terms for the culture there, and it is very strong.
It was amazing experience.
Councillor Innes.
Thank you, and thank you for coming to present today. You talked about equitable funding,
yes.
And at some point I'd be very interested as the Chair of Government Relations for the Region Appeal to mm-hmm. sit down with you and have those conversations, because as part of the William Ulster Health System and being probably one of the smallest, except for the Peel Memorial site, I think it'd be beneficial for me to have a good understanding so that when we are having those delegations with the new government, which we will be having, and I can guarantee that this summer will be a heavy schedule in meeting with them, that I can be well-versed to make sure that I'm advocating the needs that you have. So I would welcome that opportunity, and also perhaps just because we do as a municipality ask for meetings with the minister, especially during the AMO conference, so we could have maybe two opportunities to get before them to have those conversations. So I just put that to you.
Just in response, I do think that the medium-sized hospital, we are pulling together a delegation. We'll be coming to the municipal meeting this year to be able to It's a real issue for these municipalities, and I think we need to work more closely with our municipalities and come as a unified voice around this issue.
And having Mayor Thompson, and he probably will make this comment himself, but being part of the AMO board, mm-hmm. They've been very helpful in advocating for those groups. You know, we've had some success with the double hatter situation and advocating for them across all the municipalities. So I'm sure that Mayor Thompson would be happy to bring that forward. And the only other thing that I would say is I think, you know, all of us around this table try to do our part. I know that I myself have been working with Joan Burdett with regards to some of the funding opportunities and working through the development process and making sure that some of those groups are on board. So we'll continue to do our part on that end, but more than happy to sit down and have those conversations with you so that we're well-versed when we have those opportunities with the ministers.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
I was wondering, Mr. Arbuckle, with getting involved on some of this stuff, can we kind of kick that out to get the community involved, because it does serve the community through Caledon?
So thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, certainly we can look at the campaign specifically and see what opportunities there are for us to be able to push out the survey specifically.
That's great. Thank you.
And Caledon Day, are you going to be there? I know.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
I know you've been there other years,
yes.
So that's another good way to reach out to everybody.
I got a sunburn at the Jazz Fest last weekend, so I'm going to be much better.
So we'll do whatever we can to support you. Your asks are very reasonable, and we're only too glad. We'll try to communicate anything we can. I think Councillor Innes did say, you know, through AMO and through rural municipalities of Ontario, we've been dealing with these issues. And no, absolutely, we need to. This is the time that we need to really put the pressure on. So,
okay.
Councillor Befford, I see you're on the list.
Yes. excuse me. I just added, because if there's anything that you can share, perhaps through our communications department, that we can put out in our newsletters. Rather than just putting out the address, if there's anything that you've got,
sure.
If you could send it to communications,
yeah.
And you could send it out,
and
we could put it in our newsletter to help spread the word.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you so much,
Stacey.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you for your patience.
No problem.
Thanks. Claire Malcolmson from the Environmental Consultant, Environmental Defense, making presentation on Cornerstone Standards Council. Thank you for your patience tonight. Glad to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me here, and congratulations on your stamina, all of you. So thank you very much, Your Worship, for the introduction. Good evening, good night, members of council. So as you said, I'm a consultant to Environmental Defense, which is a national environmental charity I worked for them for a long time on water issues. I'm a Lake Simcoe girl, and I've been working on the responsible aggregate file for them for about a year. So I know you've heard about Cornerstone from CSC. So I'm going to try to go through Cornerstone Standards Council, CSC. Oh, did I do that? So I'm going to go through a little bit about the program. What I really want to spend some time talking about with you tonight is procurement and building demand for the program. I did note that Mr. Valentino put together a memo that basically shuts the door for now on procurement. And so I've sort of shifted a little bit what I wanted to talk about tonight, because I really want to address some of the issues that I see are misperceptions or something has got twisted around somehow. And so I just want to clarify a few things about the Cornerstone program so that you have the information that would best help inform you to decide how to proceed about the program. So what is Cornerstone? Let's see what this does. Okay. So Cornerstone, in brief, is a collaboration of aggregate operators, environmental leaders, community advocates, and experts in certification. And this, you know, as municipal government, I think you can probably appreciate how difficult it is to bring together very different stakeholders, environmental defense, and aggregate operators. We're at loggerheads. The reason we are involved in this program at all is because actually we were working with citizen groups that were fighting big aggregate operations, and I don't need to tell you about the nature of some of those fights. Those two organizations, as examples, are on very different sides of this issue. So for Cornerstone to have been able to put together a standard that is satisfactory to those two groups at the opposite ends of the spectrum is quite something. And although you will still hear criticism of the program because on both sides, nobody is totally satisfied. At the same time, that kind of tells you that we've hit the sweet spot of compromise, which is often really what government and governance is all about. So CSC works very quickly. The standard sets out, the Cornerstone standard is a set of standards, core requirements for the responsible siting and operation of aggregates in Ontario. Companies volunteer to follow this program. Auditors monitor to determine if the aggregate sites meet the requirement of the Cornerstone standard. If they do, they receive the CSC certificate. So far, Cornerstone has audited 6 sites and 5 have been certified and 1 has failed. It's not a cakewalk. So why is Cornerstone needed? Well, it was interesting that as I was walking into the room, there was somebody making a delegation here about an aggregate issue. Clearly in Caledon, there are lots of aggregate pits and there are a lot of citizens who are really engaged in this issue. I mean, I don't need to tell you what is in front of you on the screen here. It's very expensive for community groups to get involved in these battles. It consumes years of their lives. In fact, actually, last year, Penny Richardson from the CCC came to an event that I organized for environmental defense on this topic. And, I mean, it was 10 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Not every community group can launch that kind of campaign. That context, which is, you know, just fraught with tension and conflict, was not one that really served people who didn't want the aggregate pits or the companies that want to do business. And so that's why environmental defense got involved, and that's where Cornerstone comes from. The other thing is that there, until Cornerstone, there wasn't really any way for operators that were following best practices or going beyond the letter of the law, or doing more than their site plan required. There was really no way for them to be recognized for going beyond what is required. And so Cornerstone does help provide that. The benefits of certification, So here in Caledon, of course, you are both a buyer and a producer of aggregates. So from the municipal point of view, there's better transparency. From the citizen point of view, there's better transparency. So the CSE aggregate site has operator has to put a whole lot of information. Their studies and reports have to be available online publicly. Municipality is able to ask the operator for funding to do peer reviews of the operator's studies. These are just a couple of examples of the increased transparency that CSE offers. The result should be not necessarily that you don't have an aggregate pit, but that the process is simpler and less fractious and less expensive. Other benefits of CSE, though, there's really good, meaningful engagement with interested parties. The rehabilitation, which obviously is an issue around here, is laid out. It should be pretty fast. It has to be progressive, and the interested parties in the community know what the timeline is on rehabilitation. There are local hiring and procurement practices. Environmental Defense did some outreach to community groups. We asked, what are the benefits of there being an aggregate pit in your town? And it was hard for people to come up with any, but they did say local jobs. So if the jobs are the one thing that really matter to people who have to put up with the noise and aggravation of aggregate pits, then let's make sure that that the hiring is local and that the things that they need to procure are procured locally as well. Standard operating procedures and stronger natural heritage system protection. Just going to start to speed up here. Okay, so the program is moving along. So now there are 5 sites certified. The aim is for 26% of the Greater Golden Horseshoe supply to be provided by CSE-certified sites by 2020. So there is momentum, there is growth. What we need actually now is for municipalities and buyers to show that they support the direction that Cornerstone goes. So really that's why I'm here, to try to light the fire there. I don't really have time to get into a lot about the standard itself. I know you've heard about it before. The standard is being reviewed right now, and the staff report written by Caledon staff in 2016 said we would like to hear back from CSE when the standard review has occurred. So we've had a 3-year pilot period. The standard's gone through a number of changes. I'm a sort of a member on the standard review panel, and there are a lot of very positive changes that we have been pushing really hard for from an environmental and community perspective to make the standard more meaningful and to address the concerns that have been raised about it. One is to be clearer about how the standard itself goes beyond regulation. That may be one of the things that staff wants to hear more about, but their memo was a bit vague. So just so you're clear, I will follow up with staff. I really do want to understand what it is that they need to hear more about. The program is maturing, and what they mean by wanting to see more evidence of positive outcomes, we'll need to find out what that means exactly, because we don't really want there to be a barrier between council taking direction and taking action and the opportunity to do so. Okay, so what are we doing here? So there are a lot of municipalities that are already taking action on this. A number of groups of staff are currently looking into different procurement options that they can explore. So I have very little time left, so I just want to let you know, basically, we are not, CSC is not asking that any municipality only procure CSC. That's a bad idea. CSC has not asked for that to happen, and that seems to be a misperception I really want to clear up. We want to make sure that you understand that it's up to the town to decide how they would want to go about procurement. You do not need to say we will pay more for it. In fact, many of the municipalities that are looking at this right now are just saying we will buy the material if it meets our specifications and all else is equal, price and availability are equal. What we're really asking is for, in some ways, a symbolic move from council that says we support the direction that Cornerstone is going here, and if all else is equal, we would support Cornerstone for its environmental and social benefits, not we will only support Cornerstone. So, again, I'll follow up with staff to clear up what some of their questions are, and perhaps in the next term of council, then there can be some more action taken. And I'm willing to take any questions that you might have right now.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Claire, we do have a couple, so Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I'm not an expert in aggregates, and thank the Lord I don't have them in Bolton. But I know that from years on this council, what the folks in those wards that have to deal with the aggregate producers that we have here and the challenges that they've been dealing with, and some of them you touched on. We've had issues with dust and noise and truck traffic beating up the roads and groundwater issues, which are very, very mm-hmm. important, significant issues. Yeah. One of the things you said was about local jobs, and if, you know, they employ locally, but at what cost and to whose expense? And
So I can answer that. So the standard cannot, what the standard asks for in terms of local hiring and local procurement is evidence that the company has made a clear effort to advertise jobs and procurement opportunities locally. They're a business. They're going to make decisions about who they hire based on their qualifications. There's certainly, it's actually illegal and against most municipal procurement policies to specify that you have to hire locally or to specify that you have to procure locally. But what we want to make sure that suppliers of stuff that an aggregate operator might need or people that would like to work in that industry know about the opportunities to do so, and that then it's up to the operator to decide what they do.
So the concerns that I have around aggregate, and I want to know what your role really is, and one of the things is the monitoring. Who monitors these people? We had a discussion here last Tuesday night, and one of the things I know for a fact is the province of Ontario is the largest user of aggregate. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, they need to monitor, whether it's through the MOECC or especially the MOECC. They need to monitor because some of the things that a result of these aggregate pits and quarries, it's people's health. Mm-hmm. I have a real concern with the stuff that we're breathing in and people are breathing in. One of the things, and I sound like a broken record, but I will continue to say it, because it's stuff that's in the air, it's the dust, it's everything that's being created by these pits. It's the particulate matter. You have the fine particulate matter that you can't even see. That's the stuff that's getting lodged in people's respiratory tract, and that's the stuff that's causing all kinds of respiratory diseases. Who's monitoring all that?
So this is a very good question. Thank you, Councillor Groves. One of the reasons that I think that CSC is actually really valuable is that it does help address a gap in monitoring. So we know that the MNRF is responsible for the Aggregate Resources Act and the regulation of aggregate. They only monitor their sites on average once every 5 years. So that is the status quo. It's pretty bad.
Once every 5 years, I will tell you, is not acceptable.
Well, it's not acceptable. So I'm not here on behalf of the MNRF. This is, we're not a regulator. Environmental Defense has certainly lobbied for changes to the ARA, this so-called modernization. Didn't win there. We're not the strongest lobby for for that sector. So Cornerstone steps into that space because we recognize that what is happening is that there is a lot of discontent in communities, mm-hmm. And in people and individuals' health that are affected by the impacts of aggregate, whether it's traffic, dust, noise, blasting, water contamination, and that they want better oversight. So Cornerstone audits every 3 years, and one of the changes that we recommended based on feedback from groups like Gravel Watch, whose concerns we take very seriously, by the way, was that there be an unannounced visit. So that is one of the changes that we hope to see in the standard, which should be finished within a month or so.
Well, that's a good thing. I think those visits that are not scheduled, those unscheduled mm-hmm. visits are really good, because then it sort of gives you the opportunity to see exactly if they're adhering to the standards or not. So that's a good thing. And then I'll just leave you with a couple of other things that I think your group really needs to work on is the rehabilitation part of it. We've got gravel pits here that sits here, and we've been talking about rehabilitation since I was elected on here, since 2000 and before that. I haven't seen really any sort of rehabilitation, proper rehabilitation. And so I guess that's part of your role as I guess you're an advocate to make sure that these things happen and that somebody's there advocating for a balance for residents and these aggregate producers, because we haven't seen that. So, and groundwater tables, that's a huge concern. So I'm going to leave you with that. You don't have to respond. Just going to leave you with those things so that you can continue your advocacy on those sorts of things, because that's some of the challenges we have here in Caledon. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you. I will quickly respond to that. I totally agree. Rehabilitation is one of the major irritants we hear about a lot from residents for health and environmental and just aesthetic reasons. It's quite difficult, I'll tell you that. There is no silver bullet, because the model that I now have learned that the aggregate industry follows is that basically once they have just a little bit left in their pit, then they really want to sell the site to a smaller operator with smaller, lower overhead who will finish extracting what remains. And so even if they have intentions to rehabilitate, then sometimes what happens is that they say, well, the business model is now we have to move on and sell this site or surrender the license or something. So it is a challenge. I mean, it would be great if MNRF did a better job of regulating that. It's a very difficult context that we're trying to take some positive steps.
Thank you. And I think that we need to go and change those folks thinking at MNRF on how they handle this, because that's probably how the large aggregate producers get around rehabilitation, selling it off and that. So thank you for what you do, and please continue your advocacy to make sure that residents that are living close by these pits and quarries don't have to deal with the challenges that they create for them. Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks.
Okay, Councillor Innes.
Thank you. Thank you for coming and staying so late. My apologies that we weren't able to connect prior to today. So I guess my question is, because I'm familiar with what the Toronto Region Conservation Authority has done, which I think is a step in the right direction, and I understand where the Region of Peel is currently sitting. I think that as a municipal council, we all try to be make sure that there's that aspect of social responsibility, which this helps us to do, mm-hmm. Which is key, and also to be environmentally forward-thinking and responsible in that manner. So it's important. So my question for you today is, are you looking for an endorsement of the Cornerstone standards, or are you asking for an endorsement and use within our procurement process?
That's a good question. Well, until I got that staff memo, I had a kind of different strategy. So I think it's really helpful if staff who have to do the work have the information that they need and are empowered to do their job. So it seemed to me, looking at the staff report and then this memo, that there's some misinformation. And so I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that we just connect with those staff to make sure that they understand what it is that we're really asking. So that's on the staff side. On the council side, what I can do is actually put forward a resolution, maybe three. We could do this maybe another day. So there are a few things that would happen in a council resolution that would be ideal from our point of view. One is basically to say we support the idea, as you said, because it fits with our social and environmental objectives. Another is that we will procure CSC at, I mean, the most acceptable thing seems to be when price and availability are the same. It's exactly the same as what the Town of Erin has written, actually. But more important than that at this point even is to share that with your regional partners. Because, you know, we've met with the Town of Mississauga, and their staff are really keen, and they're exploring. And it's not that all of Peel is, you know, holding back. So I think that it's just an opportunity to lead, and a bit of symbolic leadership actually is really important right now. And that's what a council resolution could do that includes something about communicating this commitment to your regional partners and also to the board of CSC so that they have something on record.
So I would feel, sitting through the Toronto Region Conservation Authority when we dealt with this matter, and it was a very in-depth presentation, it was a very in-depth report from conservation staff, I felt very comfortable when we made the decision that we did make. Mm-hmm. I would feel comfortable even tonight asking staff through a resolution to go back and to look at those two issues and report back to us, just so that it's part of the process. I mean, we could hold off and do a notice of motion down the road. We're running out of time for this council.
Right.
So that's something that we need to consider, and I don't know if that's something that staff want to comment on, whether or not they feel comfortable that they could get a response back to us prior to the end of July with a report on supporting the cornerstone standards as well as what all the ins and outs of the procurement process.
Mr. Wong. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I guess from my workload point of view, I've been assigned three reports through today's council meeting. But from staff's position, I think we've made our position clear in the memo that we support the ideals and goals of CSE. But we'd like to see some results, and we'd like to see the program mature before we actually invest dollars into it.
In that investigation, did you speak with any of the Town of Caledon's partners, like the TRCA, and their procurement process and what they've done?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, we relied on what we've heard from CSC in the past. We've looked at the presentation, and we also referred to the presentation or report that was at the Region Appeal.
Okay. So that's left a lot of holes and a lot of probably not accurate and full storied information. So you know what? I'm going to take a step back, and maybe we could touch base afterwards, and I'd be happy to bring forward a motion saying as such, directing staff to review it again. I think that that's their first glance at it, but I think that we need to have a good in-depth conversation, not just with our Region Appeal partner, but our conservation partners. I am not sure if it's been passed yet at the CVC, but I know the Toronto Region Conservation Authority did a huge amount of work around this issue and presentation to our board. So we can chat offline and bring that back. And whether it happens in this term of council or not, I think that it's important that we deal with this matter. Just like we make efforts at the region, you know, saying that we have to use compressed natural gas, we're making an environmental conscious decision, and I think that we need to do that with everything moving forward. So thank you for coming today, and I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to touch now. I wish that we had of. So if we could touch base afterwards, that would be appreciated. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Befford.
Well, thank you for coming. And it's my understanding that over the last many years, we've had presentations before from Cornerstone, and that we've basically put on record that we support the tenets of what you're trying to do, although I'm not sure in a procurement point of view. But about 10 years ago or 11 years ago, the group that we sort of turned to get some assistance with the things that you're talking about was Gravel Watch. And many of us went out to some of their meetings, and we talked about things that are concerned to our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Gravel Watch was supportive of Cornerstone. But am I correct that now that Gravel Watch has pulled away from your organization?
So I was not on this file when what you're talking about occurred. What I understand is that Graham Flint, who is the president of Gravel Watch, he was on the panel that created the standard, and at a certain point he was not happy with the way it was going and he walked away. So Environmental Defense and Ontario Nature remained at the table to continue to slog it out. And we have a standard, which is achievable by industry and achieves a lot of what we were hoping for. I think it's very helpful. I mean, I am an environmental activist. I think it's very helpful to have people pushing even harder. So that's why I consult with Graham a lot, and a lot of the recommendations that we have put forward as changes to the standard come from his concerns. So we do take it seriously. I can't say whether he will be satisfied or not with the changes. I think it's safe to assume that people that work on fighting aggregate operations have a very high bar. And so I think, you know, waiting for endorsement from Gravel Watch might be a long wait. I mean, this is a compromise. So, I mean, I think that's a very fair question. What we're going to do is when the standard... So another approach... Councillor Ennis, you might want to hear this, is that another approach might be that we could come back, or CSC could come back to the town, not necessarily to council, but offer to do an education session about the changes that have been made to the standard for members that are interested in Caledon and staff, and also for other partners in Peel. Because I think there have been some legitimate questions and concerns about the standard. It was a baby, and it's been piloted for a few years, and it actually has matured. And that what has changed what is changing in the standard is a reflection of that maturity. So, I mean, I leave it to you to decide on the timing, and I respect the point that, you know, you want to see more maturation and evidence of positive outcomes in the program. We just want to have an opportunity to talk about that. Before decisions are made.
Well, thanks for your honesty, and I look forward to seeing some of the changes. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Okay, thank you, and nice to see you again. been following this for a very long time, and I think what the problem seems to be is that you get an organization like Gravel Watch who does a lot of great work, but they want everything. And the idea of Cornerstone is that the aggregate producers have to sign onto it. They have to agree to it. And you have to find a compromise somewhere. And is it perfect? No. But is it as perfect as it's going to get? Probably, for now, at least. What I have seen with aggregate producers who have signed on, when it comes to that particular site, they actually do a better job. And I think having the website with all the information there that anybody can go on and see is an advantage to those residents who live in the area. So mm-hmm. It's a good thing. Yeah. What's disappointing for me is that big companies like Lafarge, we had Green Lake application come forward and they wouldn't do CSC certification on it, which is probably one of the most sensitive environmental areas, but because it was a smaller operation, they wouldn't. That isn't great. So it's always the chicken and the egg scenario. And we did have the motion here before where we went and it went back to staff and staff weren't interested in moving forward with it. But my suggestion is, and I've always said, is you have to attack things from many different sides. So it sort of goes back to the industry when they certified wood. And you had to get the people who wanted to certify the wood, but then you had to get the producers who wanted to buy the wood, or I should say the people who wanted to buy it, who actually wanted to buy the certified wood. So you can't go at this from one angle. You have to look at it from many different angles and all come together. But I think the biggest misconception is that most people think that we're asking that the only aggregate we buy is CSC aggregate, and that's not the case. It means if the costs are the same, and one is environment, one has been certified and one isn't, why wouldn't you go to the responsible one, which is this? And it does help the people in the area, there is no doubt. And you guys have come a long way in the 10 years that I've known about you. And obviously going to the conferences, and I've seen how hard you've worked at Ontario Stone and Gravel Conference trying to get the buy-in from the aggregate industry. And they say, oh, but they're on the side of the aggregate industry. And then you go to the environmental conferences, and they say exactly the opposite. So it's funny both sides think you're on somebody else's side, mm-hmm. which all you're trying to do is find that happy medium in the middle. So I continue to support you, and I think it's important that you sit down with our staff. Our planning staff needs to understand it. They don't. Our procurement officers don't understand it, and they need to know it. And I think if we can, I mean, Aaron, little municipality signed on to you like that. And here's Big Caledon, which produces more aggregate than Aaron, and we're still not signed on to you. So I think I understand where Councillor Innes is coming from. I think what we need to do is we need, and whether it's just direction to go back, you need to sit down with our staff. You need to. So whether we do a motion right now that, Mr. Mayor, I'm saying maybe we do that motion right now because we actually bantered that back before. Do we do a motion? Don't we do a motion? And I think we should do a motion. So I think we need to do a motion that directs that planning staff, procurement, and public works sits down with Cornerstone to go through the certification process to understand it and then report back to council. And if we can't get it before the end of the year, then we can't get it before. But I think we have to start the cart. So let's get it going. So I think that was a motion.
Can I just... Yes. I don't know if this is appropriate or not, it's not necessarily that staff need to understand the certification process. It's actually the operators that need to understand the certification process. We've had a lot of meetings with municipal staff. Really only takes an hour or two just to go through what the different procurement options are. And let me just underscore, there does not have to be any financial impact.
No.
So if that's the barrier, that is not a real barrier. So I appreciate the motion for us to meet with staff and report back. It's the procurement piece is more important than understanding the certification.
Totally. But I think both can be had. They may not be had at exactly the same time, but I think we need to because rehabilitation is a real big bugbear here, as you heard today. Yeah. And I think staff need to understand how you can affect that. It's just about everybody having an understanding. So I'm not saying that it has to be together, but I think they would learn because none of our staff go to Ontario Stone, Sand and Gravel. So they've never heard you there. So I think it behooves us to actually all understand it. So, yes, and report back to council. Thank you very much. Jennifer, would you like to second this?
Sorry. Yeah. I know there's speakers on the board. Can I just make a suggestion that we let the speaker speak and then maybe take like a 2-minute? I know it's late, but make sure that it's right.
Yeah.
Could we just take a 2-minute break so that we could craft something that is most appropriate and then come back?
I think it's.
Do you want to just take a look at that and I'll. Councilor Misipelli.
Thank you.
Councilor Misipelli, you're on the deck.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Ms. Malcolmson, for coming and delegating. Just wanted to start by saying I am probably the thing that impressed me the most, not representing an aggregate-centric community that has to deal with that, is the dynamic mix of your group, the fact that you've actually got environmentalists and aggregate producers on the same committee is probably a feat unto itself. So that is something that certainly appeals to me. And I would have to expect that what standards you do come out with are probably going to be
although not what either side would want individually, collectively it's probably better than they would choose to have separately. So question I have is one of the, as opposed to a standalone set of standards and principles and all those kinds of things, is one of the goals of CSC to actually influence the overarching policy within the Aggregate Resources Act so that it actually becomes not a, you know, a policy unto yourselves, but actually a policy that governs the entire aggregate industry?
I don't actually speak for CSC, and I think the CSC's answer to that would probably be no. Environmental Defense is who I work for, and I mean, I'm on this file. I'm on the team. Environmental Defense is definitely interested in regulations being strengthened and the sector being more responsive to environmental and community concerns. The issue is, as Councillor Groves pointed out, that public bodies paid for by the taxpayer are the biggest buyer of aggregate, and they don't want to truck the stuff very far because that's what adds to the cost. So we are going to see increasing tensions between community groups and aggregate sites. This is just not going to go away. It's going to get worse. So CSC finds itself in that situation, or it lands in that spot where it's like, let's just be real. These fights are legitimate, and we need things to be better. We need to demonstrate that that the aggregate industry can do better. Not that every single site or every single operator is going to do that, but that for municipal bodies that are responsive to their citizens and their citizens' concerns, that there is an opportunity for yourselves as public buyers to make good on your social or environmental procurement policies or bylaws through showing a preference for a CSC certified product, again, because of its social and environmental benefits.
Okay. The second question, I guess it might not be so much to you, but maybe through the mayor to staff, is I did read the memo and I did see the ask, and I see the not the conflict, but the differences in the two pieces of, you know, what you're here for and what the memo shows. And I'm not sure if an actual resolution is required. My question was simply going to be, is there anything precluding CSC from engaging with the town in saying, okay, so what are these things you need from us? I read the memo and they said that they want it to mature to see what the policies are and maybe come back in 2020. Mm-hmm. And like you said, maybe there are some gaps or some misinformation. What is precluding us from just having those conversations, answering those questions, and maybe staff could get that answer that they're looking for to be satisfied prior to that time?
Absolutely. So I guess, you know, there are many sides to this. When I sat down today and thought about it, I said, I'm just going to pick up the phone and phone that staff person. And so I did, but I didn't get through. So had I been able to have that conversation earlier today, maybe this would have been different. But that is what needs to happen. I think we were just disappointed that Environmental Defense and specifically CSC had not been contacted to address whatever questions or gaps remained. I mean, I totally understand staff are busy and, you know, the timeline, I will say nothing about that, right? It's completely up to yourselves and to staff when is an appropriate time. It's just we're here to have the conversation, to answer the questions, and we just don't want information funneling in from those who don't support the CSC program and for that to be the information upon which decisions are made. Instead, we just want to ensure that we're part of the conversation. So okay. That's why I just picked up the phone today, but we'll try again.
Yeah, and again, I just think that that's probably going to get you what you're looking for and answer those questions that staff have. And so if there is a resolution and it looks like there is in some form or fashion, for myself, I want to make sure that staff are empowered with making sure, whether it's public works or procurement or policy or what have you, that they have things that they need satisfied, that those are brought forward from staff's perspective, certainly from your group, that what you're looking to get through gets discussed, and then the conversation just happens. That's all that I would want to ask. I wouldn't want to prematurely bind staff's hands as to the outcome of that discussion or anything along those lines. I would only support having that discussion, which seems what you're looking for anyway. So thank you again for coming out. Thanks.
Thank Councillor Befford?
Well, I just, from a personal point of view, don't think it's fair to say that our staff are not familiar. I know that I've spoken at length with Ohi and Brandon and Rob, and they're very familiar with the tenants, again, of Cornerstone. I'm not sure about procurement, because that's something that we've talked about fairly recently. But as far as the basic ideas of Cornerstone, I think our staff are well versed in that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, I'm not sure a motion is needed. I think what you started off by saying is that you'd like to meet with representatives of the town and the region and go over again, refresh, if you will. And that's what I would prefer to see rather than coming forward with a motion. But, that's up to the folks who want to bring it forward. But I just want to put a word in for the staff that I think are fairly well-versed because we've had this several times over the last 8 to 10 years. Thanks.
Councilor McClure.
Yeah, quickly. What I'd like to see happen is rehabilitation. If one of my sons has an airplane, and if you fly up over the escarpment, looks like a bomb hit it. Even the Bratton Brick Pit, just north, but up 10 Highway, on either side of the road, is that ever going to be changed? Bratton used to have, there used to be gravel pits in Bratton, and they've all been rehabilitated, and they all look beautiful. And I think it's disgusting. We used to be the greenest town. And you know what? It's a disaster up there. Even driving up 10 Highway, you can't see it that much, but you can see some. Is there any hope of getting them rehabilitated? It doesn't look like it to me.
So
it looks like there's been a war.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I agree. And so again, this just comes down to the chicken and egg question, where public buyers indicate that they will support a higher standard of aggregate extraction and rehabilitation. That encourages the industry to do better, to become, to go for CSC certification.
Okay.
So that's sort of the symbolic move that, you know.
I think it's getting worse all the time.
Right.
That's just my thought. It looks disgusting to me.
I'm not going to argue that.
Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. I think that what Councillor Shaughnessy and I are trying to say is Caledon has always been known as being green, but more importantly, being a leader and being proactive. We're known as being a leader in the aggregate industry and advocating and ensuring that we have policy. We have policies that the province actually took straight from our official plan, because we were doing things that the province should be doing and directing as a whole. And to Councillor McClure's point, when we are both sides of the aggregate issue. We're a producer and we're a buyer and a purchaser. Whereas when we get into the rest of the region of Peel, they are purchasers. So I think that what we're saying is I understand the memo from Amadeo. I'm going to respectfully request that they go back, because while the region is looking at it in their timelines, I think that we need to look at it and be proactive with our response. I think that we have an opportunity to take a leadership role in this matter as a community that is both a producer and a purchaser. I think that we have a social responsibility as being part of the top 10 aggregate municipalities to take that leadership role. So while staff have given us their comment, as council, I'm going to give a little pushback and ask that, I know that we have a resolution somewhere, but I think that that is our ask, is just to, let's review it, let's sit down, let's talk about the standards so that everybody understands is on the same page. And let's sit down and talk about procurement, and then I would request that staff also sit down with the Conservation Authority and talk about their procurement process, because they've already done it, they've already endorsed it, and there's no financial burden. So I'd like that to be known. I think it's the socially responsible thing to do, and I think that as Caledon, as the town of Caledon, it's nice to let the bigger organization that we're a child to, being the Region of Peel, take the lead, but sometimes as Caledon and the municipality that actually is both the producer and the purchaser, we need to be responsible and take a lead as ourselves. And I think that other organizations and other municipalities across the province are looking at Caledon as to what we're doing. We're part of the top 10 aggregate producing municipalities. Are we going to take a stand and do what we think is socially conscious? So I think that's what we're asking for. We're just asking staff to go back and review it and report back. And unfortunately, given the timelines, it may not be before we can make a decision on it. But I think that it's important enough that it needs to make sure that if it doesn't come back to this council, that it comes back to the next council table.
So are we putting a motion or what are we doing? Okay. So I guess I'll wait till the motion comes and I'll speak to it. Thank you.
Moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, second by Councillor Innes, that staff be directed to review the request to endorse Cornerstone Standards Council standards and potential use within the procurement process. That staff be directed to meet with Cornerstone Standards Council and the Toronto Region Conservation Authority and report back to Council. Councillor Groves.
I'm fine with supporting this motion, but I guess, and this comes up from time to time over the last few years that on this council when we're talking about aggregate, how do we incorporate some citizens as part of this process? I don't know where we put them. I don't know if there's anything in this motion. I have no idea. And the reason I'm raising that is because we have a lot of residents who are well-versed, more so than every single member on this council in aggregate. And their expertise, their knowledge on both the aggregate side, the policies, and also the community is very, very valuable. It'd be very valuable to you in your advocacy and whatever you do. So I'm putting the question out there. I don't know where it fits. I don't know how we do this.
I can quickly respond to that. I think one of the ideas that I had was to come back to Caledon to present changes that have been made to the standard when that happens. And maybe that is at the same time that we meet with staff. I think that is logical, and looks like we're at least a month away from finalizing the standard. So maybe at that same time, that would be something that we could put out to citizens that are interested. I don't up to
would
you.
Would you be agreeable to hosting a community meeting, workshop with the citizens who are interested? We have many of them that come out to this council, and over the years they've been coming to council. You mentioned Penny Richardson.
I'll talk to Nick at CSC about that. I think that's a good idea. I think that the procurement conversation is a conversation to have with staff, because it really just has to do with, you know, Caledon specifically. But yes, but I'll ask Nick about that, and I think that if there's interest from Caledon to have that, then I think the answer will very likely be yes.
I'll
have to check.
Yeah, I think you'll find there's a lot of interest from the community to participate in something like this.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay.
Councillor Messapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Just reading this, this is a bit more prescriptive than what I was hoping for. I was just hoping to just continue the conversation, to get to that point, whenever that point is, wherever and whenever, that staff have all of the answers that they're looking for, that you've got all of the information that they need to see, and then come back. So I'm a little stuck on this one, I'll be honest. A question I have is, so I guess to that point, and I guess through you, Mayor Thompson, to staff, is in the memo, it does have a date of 2020, which seems quite a ways away, and certainly I would not support it being unnecessarily far away. I would certainly prefer to have that answer back as soon as the information's there and what staff are looking for and looking to see is present, and then report back. I don't know if that is reasonably 2020 or sometime before. That would be my hope, but I wouldn't.
I don't see any 2020 there, Councillor.
No, I'm referring. 2018. I'm referring to the memo. So my question to Mayor Thompson to staff is, do they have any concerns at the outset with this? Again, 2020, as suggested in the memo by staff, is, you know, over a year out, and maybe there's a good reason for that. I don't know, but I would like to ask staff before this comes to a vote. Thanks.
Right. Well, I'll ask the CEO. Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor Mazzapelli, what's up there, I don't believe staff has, and I didn't mean to cut Mr. Wong off, but I just wanted to be short and to the point, is that staff would have no problem looking at this. We'd be doing this anyways. So if the question is, do we feel that we will have enough time to accomplish this? Yes. There is no time frame, so it gives us some flexibility, to Mr. Wong's point, as far as time management is concerned, because there's a lot on the plate, so we don't have an issue with it.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Wong. I know you were ready to go, weren't you?
No further questions. All in favor? Carried. Thank you so much, Claire, for your perseverance tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Get some coffee on the way home. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the rest of your meeting.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Moved by Councillor McClure, second by Councillor Innes, that the meeting to be extended to proceed one additional hour beyond the hour of 11 p.m. to consider unfinished business. All in favor? Carried. Any correspondence that anybody wants brought forward? Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you, Devin. It's almost 11 o'clock. Oh. The memo having to do with pool, spa, and hot tub water drainage guidelines. I understand. So my problem is with the memo. I sent it off to the Region Appeal because I immediately saw that the memo had some errors in it. Concern was from the Region Appeal, and Region Appeal sent something back later this afternoon, was in the memo it refers to discharging into the septics. And if we discharge pool water into a septic system, then your septic system stops working. The other problem is that if you discharge into the septic, if you're in a development area like Inglewood, you shut down the sewage treatment plant. It'll immediately forget it. Then they'll have to start carting it back out again at $30,000 a day to remove. So my concern, now I understand in the eventual guidelines it talks about the Region Appeal, but my concern is this memo put it on the record telling people that you dump it in your septic system. So the Region Appeal came back and said you could dump it in Caledon East into the septic system because that septic system can handle it. You could dump it in Bolton and that system would handle it. The moment you dump it in Inglewood, we shut her down. So I just don't want any communication going out to anybody saying that you're going to dump the water into your personal septic system, because the moment it gets flooded, it doesn't work. So I don't know who they spoke to at the Region Appeal, but this comes directly from the Water and Wastewater Department at the Region Appeal. So it may not specifically say it in the guidelines, but it certainly outlined it in the memo. So I just wanted to provide some clarity and that staff make sure they make the required changes.
Ms. Tollett?
Sure. Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor Shaughnessy. So we did talk to the manager of environmental control that does the regional sewer. So I know you talked to a different person. Mm-hmm. The guidelines, if was provided on the first memo that came to council last week. On the second guideline, it says never. It says never discharge directly into the septic system in the never column. So under the sanitary, it also says to refer back to the region. The region has certain requirements because certain areas say yes, certain areas say no. So we didn't want to specify in the guidelines. However, based on the information that I just received from the region, we can add that additional information that the region provided a chart to say if it's in Caledon East or Bolton, it's, you can do the deceptive or to the sanitary, but in Inglewood or certain areas, you can't. So we will provide that chart as part of the guidelines if that works.
Okay? Works. Thank you.
Okay. All right. No further on the correspondence. We'll move forward to announcements. Councillor Downey, any announcements? Anybody over on this side? Yeah. Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. June 7th is the Blood Donors Clinic in Caledon East from 3 to 7, and also is the public open house for Phase 3 and 4 from 7 to 8:30 at the complex. And it's also Election Day. Very important provincially. Remind everybody to vote. And also June 10th is the 5K Furry Friends at Albion Hills. And it's a fundraiser for animal shelter. So if residents can come out, that would be great. And I will save what else is happening the following weekend for the mayor, because I'm sure he wants to talk about that.
Okay. Councillor Gross.
Councillor Innes took one of mine, which was the Furry Friends, because I'm on that committee. The other one is really the farmers market, so encourage everybody to come out and support the Bolton Farmers Market. Every Saturday it's open, so just come out and show your support. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Shaughnessy.
I went to that farmers market and I actually bought some really nice jewelry in Bolton on the weekend. So I support it, and I bought the sausages and the pastry from them too. So it was a great lunch. I'm mentioning Caledon Fair. Caledon Fair opens up the 8th, 9th, and 10th of June is Caledon Fair. So I hope everybody comes out and supports that. And that is fine for me. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I guess no further. We have, everybody knows about Cheers Caledon and Caledon Day, which is 2 weeks from now. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody out there. Also want to mention that June 21st is the National Indigenous Peoples Day. June 4th to 10th is the Local Food Week. June is Recreation and Parks Month, Seniors Month, National Aboriginal Heritage Month, and Pride Month. Is there, without any further on that, I will go to council inquiries. Councillor Downey, none. Anybody over here? Okay. Anybody over here? None. Okay. We'll now move on to bylaws. Okay, so just because the thing here, the clerk told me I don't have to read everything what the bylaw is about, so I'll just read the bylaws. Following bylaws read the first time and finally passed. Bylaw moved by Councillor Downing, second by Councillor Innes. Bylaw 2018-45, bylaw 2018-46, bylaw 2018-47, bylaw 2018-48. Bylaw 2018-49, Bylaw 2018-50, Bylaw 2018-51,
Bylaw 2018-52, Bylaw 2018-53, and Bylaw 2018-54. All in favor? And that's got Sonoma Drive that I just talked about. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor Groves, that the following bylaws be read the first time and finally passed. Bylaw 2018-55 to confirm the proceedings of the Council of the Corporation of the Town of Caledon in its Council meeting held on the 5th day of June 2018. All in favor? Carried. Councillor McClure, you want to move adjournment? Second by Councillor Misapelli. Thank you, everybody.